Well, here?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. All right.
Be sure to make those things. We the last time the meeting was hard to hear in the recording, so put those things right in your face.
Okay. We're going to start our meeting for July 11th, the Planning Commission meeting for July 11th. And the first thing on the August 10th. The first thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes for July 11th.
Actually, approve the agenda.
I'm going off of your agenda. Sorry. So approve the agenda for August 10th.
I think the only comment I would suggest
we need to move. A move and then thank you. Probably move second and then we'll get to your.
Yeah, so who moved? I was going to move. But...
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I will move to approve the agenda with a comment that we should clarify on item 3 that we will talk. Let the citizens talk about all 3 ordinances at the same time, because.
What does that mean? No. Okay. So that's we're approving the agenda. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm just clarifying that.
Okay.
We're going to have one public hearing to do right. 3
different
is what I would suggest, rather than 3 public hearings.
Okay. Right. First, you have to approve in a second, and then you can go into discussion.
Oh, so I have made a motion in order to approve with a change.
Okay.
Okay.
And who's seconding it?
Well, yeah, I'll second it.
Okay. Now the discussion.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who wants to make a comment on that? We're going to the John's recommendation is that the public hearing is for all 3 changes.
That's what it says on the agenda.
Okay, just relax. We're going to get through this. We're going to have the public meeting for all 3. So all comments will be for all 3. Do I have any other discussion on that? Any disagreement? Okay, may I have a vote from the commission, please?
John, aye.
Pauline, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Oh.
Philly, I.
Okay. Tina, I. Okay. Okay. The next thing on the agenda is to approve the July 11th minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve.
Do you want me to say? I'd like to approve the minutes from July's meeting.
Great.
Thank you. I will second it then, Shelley. Doug Barron, second.
Any comments?
I have one comment, just that I was not at the July meeting.
I will make that correction.
Okay, correction of removing April's name. Can I have a vote from the commission, please?
Wayne Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Elaine, aye. Shelley, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Okay. Lee is going to give a overview of the proposed ordinance amendments. Is that okay with you, Lee? You ready?
Self unmuted here. Hello. So we have a lot of material here to cover, and I think that my time will, for the most part, be better spent answering factual questions, not taking any comments because that's for the hearing, but answering factual questions that people from the public might have based on their reading of these proposed amendments. So I am just going to hit a few highlights and then hope that there is time enough for people to ask their questions. The first set of amendments is a series of assorted and miscellaneous changes, mostly, though not entirely, to the subdivision regulations in Chapter 152 of the Town Code. And really, there isn't a lot to say about them except to point out those places where they address specific problems that people are aware of. We have changed these to try to clarify a number of the questions that have come up about access, to define private driveways, to define private streets, and to ensure that the historic routes of access that have been the subject of a lot of conversation are actually shown on subdivision plats, preliminary subdivision plats. That was not a requirement before, as far as the Boulder Code was concerned. It's at least presumably a requirement of state law, but it didn't happen. And so now we've tried to clarify. One of the themes that runs through all these amendments is trying to make life less complicated for landowners in Boulder who want to make small changes. And so one of the changes in language here confirms some vague language that existed previously to say that a person proposing a one-lot subdivision that includes no required improvements, that is to say, not a street, not some sort of facility that would serve anyone else, that can be done with one visit to the town council instead of two, which is to say, technically, that the preliminary plat will end up doubling as the final plat once it's revised in accord with whatever the council directs. So trying just to make things marginally easier for landowners who are making small changes. And I think that is really all I have to say. We're correcting things about public notice, correcting things here. But I don't know that there's a need for me to say more about these particular changes. They address issues that the Planning Commission has been working on for months, if not years, and clarify things about access improvements, public notice. And what I think I should do is pause there and see if anyone in attendance has a question about any of the specifics of this first installment of amendments.
I'm not sure where you want me to be on this document, so tell me.
The Planning Commission will have, Planning Commission will have time after the hearing to delve into this at whatever depth they want to. But if the public has specific questions about how or why, now's a good time to answer those questions.
Does anyone in the public have any questions?
If you have any questions,
Tom. Okay, that's what I'm asking. Asked John, he said the public, is it for us or the public?
I think Lee is talking about the public. Lee, can you just clarify, you were just going to answer questions from the public before the hearing, is that correct?
Right, that's the purpose of this time before the hearing. The Planning Commission,
I understood.
Like I said, has all the time they need to work through this after the public hearing. But I want to make sure that before people from the public make a statement at the hearing, if they choose to do so, that they have any factual questions that would help them better understand. Make sure we have those questions answered.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay.
In the absence of questions, which given that these are not particularly scintillating amendments, I understand, let's move on to a couple of topics that are a little more interesting, but also tremendously important. The two major initiatives, if you will, that are represented in these amendments are to allow the averaging of lot sizes instead of requiring uniform minimum lot sizes of 5 acres. These amendments do not change at this time the 5 acre average. They just make it an average rather than a minimum, so that a person who had 10 acres could, for example, have a 7 acre lot and a 3 acre lot. The average would still come out to 5 and they would be allowed that much flexibility. And again, you know, the theme of this work at the point we're at this evening is to try to make minor subdivisions easier and more sensible for both the town and the landowner. And we believe that averaging lot size gives landowners significant flexibility. It also gives the town the ability to say, hey, rather than splitting that irrigated parcel down the middle, do you want to keep that together so it's easier to manage and put the additional home that you propose up on the dry land, which could be a 2 acre lot as opposed to a 5 acre lot. So that's the intent of averaging. It's really not very complicated. I guess the one thing, one detail about it that I should mention is that you get to average once. In other words, the parcel size that exists on the date of the adoption of this, presuming that it is adopted, would be the parcel size on which the average is based. You couldn't split that and then use averaging again. So are there any questions, again, factual questions about averaging and how it works?
Go ahead, Mark. Do you mind? Yeah. You might have to turn it on.
Okay, just make sure the button is green.
I guess it's on, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, Mark Nelson. So I had a couple of questions there. First of all, I want to say this is a lot of stuff to go over.
Correct.
I can't believe that you kind of crammed all this into one hearing.
Okay, that's a comment. The question is.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I think you get the idea that, you know, this may not represent all the questions I have. This is what I was able to.
Great.
Explain. Okay. So I looking through this on, I noticed on that part on this page, I guess, maybe page 4 on the this is a planning commission recommendation, and those considerations there I thought were pretty vague and subjective.
And this is which, which ordinance were you thinking?
Oh, this is the one we're talking about, the average lot size.
Average lot size, thank you.
You're looking at the planning commission recommendation section, Mark?
Yeah. And okay. So I read that planning commission recommendation, that sounded pretty vague to me. I don't know. Maybe if I took more time with it, but it seemed pretty vague.
Well, I would like to make just one Fine. Explanatory comment there so that everybody understands, because it is a, and that's an observation that needs to be made during the hearing, but it will also count it as a question here. Interestingly enough, the way that Chapter 152 was originally written, or at least amended, the only thing the Planning Commission could make recommendations on was the provision of facilities. They did not have the authority, although they've used that authority in the past, to make recommendations about the lot layout or other design aspects of the subdivision. And so, given partly that the Planning Commission has already been doing this and partly that the Planning Commission needs to be able to do that in the future, I put in something that is admittedly rather vague for the time being, because as these documents have made clear, Chapter 152 has to go away and be entirely replaced by the end of 2024. And it's just not worth it to make a tremendous effort to refine these standards and considerations at this time, when we know that the whole thing is going to be revised in accord with the new state law. But it was worth it to get in here and give the Planning Commission at least an admittedly vague authority to look at the design of subdivisions above and beyond whatever infrastructure they might include. So that's the reason and the logic of what I proposed. And I think that the best way to look at it is it gives the Planning Commission authority that it needs to talk about subjects that it has and needs to talk about. But this will all be substantially revised within the next 18 months.
Could you clarify when you say Chapter 22 has to go away? What do you mean by that?
Chapter 152 in the Boulder Town Code is the subdivision regulations, and it is, in addition to the problems that it already embodies, it's just simply not in compliance in any way, shape, or form with the new law passed by the Utah legislature last session.
Okay, so why are you doing, is that out of order? Shouldn't you have done that first before you did this then? Or should they have been done at the same time? Why is this preceding that?
Well, that's a reasonable question too, but the subdivisions, the Planning Commission is going to see applications for subdivisions before the deadline for replacing Chapter 152. And so this is, again, an interim measure to help the Planning Commission have clear authority to try to do its job during that interim 18 months. The public will obviously be seeing whatever the Planning Commission is working on as they move towards compliance with the new state law. But in the meantime, we're not stopping people from applying to subdivide. And so we needed to change the problem that existed in the interim.
Okay, let me move on to, so minimum under minimum lot size, it said the smallest lot parcel, it doesn't really say what the minimum lot size is. Is that
the minimum lot size is shown in the revisions to the table, the table of development standards. So and the minimum lot sizes that are set in there right now are 1 acre. But again, you're still at the average of 1 unit per 5 acres. So if I have 10 acres, I can have a 9 and a 1. I can't have multiple 1 acre lots.
Leads me to my other question. So is it a 10 acre minimum to do that, or can you do that on 5 acres or 1 acre, or what's the?
It really, from a practical point of view, the code, the amendments I've written don't say this, and I suppose that they could, but it's just math. You can't split a lot of 9.5 acres into 2 5-acre lots. Not possible. And so you have to have a minimum of 10 acres to take advantage of the averaging.
Okay, so, all right, that was my question. So you have to have a minimum of 10 acres to take advantage of this.
Yes, that is that is the way it's written right now.
I actually like that. And then, and that division can only be made once?
That division can only be made once.
Okay, I like that. Now, the big question is, when you revise your Chapter 152, the subdivision ordinance, can that all change?
Well, technically, yeah. I mean, or it could change in between. The Planning Commission could hold another hearing and propose another amendment. It's our intent, I think, and the Planning Commission members are free to chip in. It's our intent to be making changes that will carry over. The way the state law is changing is that almost everything that the town has any discretion over, almost anything the town has any say about, is going to be in the zoning ordinance rather than in the subdivision regulations. The subdivision regulations are going to have to be reduced to a purely technical matter. The town council, although the mayor is required to sign them, the town council will not discuss subdivisions after the end of next year. And depending upon how we decide to do it, subdivisions may not even go to the Planning Commission. The intent of the legislature was to make subdivision essentially automatic, and the town will have to figure out the best way that it can comply with that law. So in order to deal with any of these density issues that you and I are talking about right now, It will all end up being in chapter 153 in the zoning.
Okay, I think you've answered my question. I'm a little concerned that we go ahead and do this. I kind of like this actually in a way, but what I don't like is the possibility of that being like raised down the road a couple of months or even a year, and then it turns into something completely different.
Right. Well, I hope that you will make that statement again during the public hearing so it's on the record of the public hearing.
You can count on it. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else before we move on to the final part of the amendments? Not hearing any more questions. The third part of the amendments, which I believe is the shortest and in some ways the simplest, allows a duplex anywhere that the town code now allows a single family dwelling. And that may sound to some people as if it's a radical change, but in fact, because of the change the legislature made in 2021, requiring all municipalities and counties to allow internal accessory dwelling units, and because of the changes the town itself made, adding external accessory dwelling units in, I believe, 2018. Given those changes, it is already possible to have two dwelling units per lot in Boulder. And it is somewhat deceptive to say that we have a policy of just one dwelling per lot, because that isn't what the practical reality of what's possible is at this point in time. And so in discussion, it seemed like rather than making this obscure and complicated, we ought to make it clear. And making it clear has some advantages. First of all, there are duplexes in Boulder that right now are non-conforming uses and therefore have severe restrictions on their ability to make improvements. They would become conforming uses, and that might help encourage the owners to make improvements at some point in the future. It would eliminate the complexity of dealing with internal accessory dwelling units the way they are defined and set up in state law. And it would also eliminate, and this may be, at least in my mind, this is the problem that I see absolutely likely to happen. The state law says that if you have an internal accessory dwelling unit, you have to reside in the home, so that it would be the owner and a renter or perhaps a family member or somebody who is not actually paying rent. And the question that occurs immediately after that is, well, what happens if I set that up, invest in making an internal accessory dwelling unit, have someone living there, and I decide for health reasons, for job related reasons, or for whatever reasons to move away? Are we going to throw the renter out and then convert it back to a single family dwelling? And I think there are then two observations, one of which is that I can't imagine the town of Boulder actually enforcing that against someone. And two, even if I could imagine that, I'm not sure how it's good public policy to decrease the number of available dwellings in a place where we have some issues housing people who need to be there. So the obvious solution to all the complexities in this is just to say, hey, duplexes are allowed. It makes it administratively simpler. It makes it simpler for landowners to understand what rules apply to them. It encourages the improvement of non-conforming duplexes, possibly at some point in the future. And so that's where we're at, is it just seems like we're not really changing policies in a great way. We're recognizing a reality and trying to simplify it to where it's easier to deal with. And I will be happy to take any questions that people have about that.
Go ahead, Jen.
Hi, it's Jennifer Bach. I have a couple of questions. Is this a proposed solution for our attainable housing, this duplex suggestion? Is that the intention?
I think that's part of the intention, is that allowing duplexes might provide more affordable units. There is no guarantee that that's true. We need to be honest about that. It simply makes it very clear that the possibility exists. But I think it is equally true that the intent here is just to simplify and clarify a very complicated administrative issue in the interaction between what the town does and what the state requires. And to make it hopefully easier both for the town to administer and for landowners to understand. So yes, hopefully it will help with affordable housing, but it also solves another real problem.
Theoretically, if we allow duplexes on every lot in Boulder, could people who are speculators and developers from out of town buy up a bunch of things, build duplexes, and sell them to the highest bidders?
Theoretically, they could. Right now, they can buy up a bunch of houses. But you have to remember that those same speculators that you're talking about are legally allowed to create an internal accessory dwelling unit.
Are they?
And so there isn't a big difference here.
Doesn't it have to be their primary residence to have an internal accessory dwelling unit?
Well, that's what the law says. Do you think that the town of Boulder is going to enforce that?
That's questionable. Where are the duplexes in Boulder currently? Are you able to give us a couple of examples?
I think that perhaps John or someone else on the Planning Commission can answer that question better than I can.
Thank you. Anybody?
Since they are currently non-conforming uses, I don't want to be accusing anyone on the public record of having a non-conforming use.
I'm not in the business of doing that either.
Understandable.
But yeah. I think we have affirmation that they do in fact exist.
Is there a way to have deed restrictions and things, or is it just like a general sweeping allowance?
Well, to like make as it's written, it simply makes duplexes uses by right in the same way that single family homes are now uses by right. If you start talking about deed restrictions or some other complexity that you'd add to this, then one of our two principal goals in doing it is no longer being served. We're not simplifying things for people.
All right, that's my only question. Those are my only questions. Thank you. Thanks, Jen. Okay, anyone else with any questions? Okay, so there's three. We broke it up into three ordinances. So there's a lot of information, and I totally acknowledge that, Mark. It's a lot of information, but it's also information that we've been talking about for a while. And I think that getting it out there in some kind of form allows us to have some feedback. And that's why we're having this hearing. And we've also been, the first one, the housekeeping one, was started through the town saying there's inconsistencies, you need to figure this out. And there's even more than is even stated in these ordinances. And as you can tell, we have a lot of, we have two people who have their hands up. Are these questions for Lee, Donna? Donna Owens?
I raised my hand just a little bit slow. I actually had a question. I think I got here late because I was trying to read this. Anyway, I didn't know the order of how things were. I have questions on the very first proposal.
Housekeeping.
Which you're discussing now, I believe, is housekeeping. And I could ask Lee or I could ask you, but I have quite a few. Okay, I'll see if I can put it together. Unfortunately, I had it up in front of me and now all I can see is this shared screen. So I'm not looking at the actual discussion, but I have for number 6 on the, I just put on actual plat or road giving going. Number 1, 2A, I'll start. I wondered what the definition of adequate was. And on number 6,
Donna, could you give me more? Where
I wish I could. Like I said, I can't get to that screen because my screen, I'm not being able to get out of the Zoom to lower my something's to get back to where it was. It has to do.
Donna, you can still, like, if you minimize Zoom, you're still going to be able to talk to us.
I wish I could. Every time I go to minimize it, it says sign in, and I can't hit the minimize button. I would otherwise. Oh, and when I
get where you're talking about, keep talking.
Okay. Well, that was all just as there's a word adequate, and I don't think there's a definition for that. But what I'm really concerned about is the road. Oh gosh, I have a whole page here.
Road what?
I'll paraphrase my questions and just say the road agreement, is it for the road going to the subdivision or the road that's in the subdivision? It talks about adequate roads for each plot. Is it the plots on the subdivision or are there road agreements getting to your subdivision? And I don't think that's very clear and it's been a problem for us. So I wondered if this would be a good time to discuss that.
Well, it is a good time to raise the question, which again, I think you should raise during the hearing portion of this, but let's talk about it for a second. First, in terms of adequate, in the context of the ordinance, adequate is going to mean that it complies with the standards that are adopted. Right now adopted in chapter 152. And so that would include those things that are there now. We also have a placeholder in there for new street standards. I didn't want to discuss street standards in depth this evening because it's not really for the hearing, but we can briefly say that the street standards we have now are very suburban. They are probably not appropriate for Boulder, both as a matter of cost and a matter of character. And we need to get a set of street standards that is rural and actually makes sense. And the Planning Commission will be discussing that. So in the final analysis, adequate is going to be defined in the context of the ordinance in a pretty specific and useful way. The maintenance agreements, which would be associated with either private driveways or private streets, the way this is set up, would apply within the subdivision. That's actually all the Planning Commission or the Town Council would have the power to do at the moment of approving a subdivision, right? They can only impose a condition on those people who are applying for permission to subdivide. So that question, I guess, is answered sort of by definition, is that a maintenance agreement for a private street within a subdivision or for private driveways within a subdivision. We have tried to rewrite this so it's clear that we're thinking about how it connects to other things, including parcels. And so let's take an example. Let's say that you owned a parcel of land, unsubdivided, had a house on 10 acres, 100 acres, whatever it might be. The size is not relevant. And your neighbor wanted to subdivide. Well, your neighbor would be responsible for having a maintenance agreement that maintained the road to your property. That isn't really clear in the existing regulations in chapter 152. And we have tried to clarify here that we're going to consider historic routes of access, existing easements, all of those things. And some of you know from conversations that have happened over the last, couple of years now that there's a lack of clarity about historic routes of access. And we've tried to write this so that that's captured. But given the way the power of the town council works, if access is extended to a neighboring property, the maintenance of that access would be up to the people within the subdivision.
But Lee, I'm sorry to bother you, but I have, sure. I'm still very confused. It feels like you said one thing and then completely negated it. If there is a person who is not part of the subdivision, there's a new subdivision going next door to them, it maintaining the road that goes through is one thing, but the actual road agreement would be on the subdivision or would include all the neighbors too. That is what I would like.
It can only be on the subdivision.
Thank you. That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
But so Lee, I think the issue is the roads to the subdivision. If it's a historical use, say it's a driveway, and then someone just decides to subdivide further down, it changes that use. And that's the question of, then there needs to be agreement if it's a private street or the town chooses to accept it. It's changing that historic use. And that's, I think, Donna's question of there needs to be agreement with those because you're changing the use of the land.
Well, we can determine whether or not there is lawful, adequate access to the boundary of a subdivision, but we can't impose a maintenance agreement on somebody who's not part of the subdivision. So the Planning Commission is going to have to decide at that point where they could say, yeah, the people within the subdivision have to show us how they're going to maintain this road. The Planning Commission is going to have to decide whether adequate access, which would be to say an all-weather road that meets certain standards, exists. We're trapped. We're trying to make it better, but we are still trapped in the reality that there's been a great deal of informal access to properties in Boulder, and we don't have clarity about maintenance in some cases. But we can't really say to someone who's subdividing, you're required to compel a neighbor to sign a maintenance agreement. That's not within the town's powers. The town,
a private street that has, say, 5 lots, and then the subdivisions pass those 5 lots, and they subdivide maybe once or another 5 lots. That's increasing the road usage. And so shouldn't all parties be involved?
Well, if in fact they're re-subdividing and going through the formal process, then it would be clear that everybody needs to be part of the maintenance agreement.
What if that those initial 5 lots weren't part of a subdivision? What if they were just lots to begin with?
Well, if they were independent parcels that were not part of a platted subdivision, then an access goes through them to the subdivision, then we find ourselves in a difficult position. But the Planning Commission has to find that there's adequate access to the subdivision. The town can't compel those other owners to sign on to the maintenance of that road. The town can acknowledge the prescriptive use of that road and make it a public right-of-way, which leaves it as a public right-of-way that the town may or may not maintain. So the town has a legal means to ensure that the access isn't blocked because of the prescriptive easement. But, you know, there's a reason why most communities have public streets, which is it clarifies maintenance in a way that it's difficult to attain in some parts of Boulder right now. And there just isn't, short of the town feeling wealthy enough to take over the maintenance of all of those pieces of road, there is no good solution to this.
Okay, obviously we have a lot to work on roads, so still. And not totally clear in these ordinances. So anybody else have any questions to Lee? Shelley?
Shelley, yes. Part of the
Planning Commission.
I have a question about duplexes. I get that we have them and they're already existing, and I understand single family dwellings. And the only question I have is my difference that I see is a single family dwelling, they count on cars for so many. But if you make it a duplex, you double what they're doing. Do we have to address that they have parking for a
duplex? It is addressed in the amendments. The amendments change the table of parking standards to say that you have to have 4 parking spaces for a duplex. The requirement for a single family is 2 spaces. And so that's been addressed.
Okay, anyone else? Jen?
I came up with another question. It's Jennifer Buck again. If we allow duplexes, are they then automatically allowed internal accessory dwelling units as well?
For the state? You can't put it in, the way the law works, you cannot put an accessory dwelling unit in anything other than a single family home. So no, the duplex, each duplex unit would not be allowed a further internal accessory dwelling unit. And that's that is not stated here because it's clear in state law.
All right, thanks.
Okay, anyone else? Shelley, your answer? Okay. I think I'd like to let everyone know. We'll just go ahead and open up the hearing so we can hear everybody's comments. Can I have a motion to close the meeting?
I'll make a motion to close our meeting and open the regular meeting and open the public hearing.
Thanks.
I'll second. John.
Okay, can I have anybody object? Can we have a vote on that, please?
Pauline Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Okay. So this public hearing is for any comments on 3 ordinances, and it would be great if people could specify which one they're speaking about.
3 minutes.
About 3 minutes comments. That would be great. The first one is housekeeping.
Reverse it.
Housekeeping, and then the duplex, or just refer to housekeeping, the duplex, and the average lot size. Thank you. Housekeeping is the first ordinance that was listed that is clarifying the. There we go. Right. Okay, so that was Cindy. She wanted to know which one was the housekeeping. Housekeeping is the one that clarifies and the unclear and arbitrary ordinance plans that we have.
Okay, wait. If you're going to, will you come up to the microphone?
State your name and ask her.
Yeah, your question and your comment has to be through the mic.
Do we have the mic?
We don't.
Okay.
The mic doesn't work.
Okay. Since you have trouble coming up here, I'll try to repeat it. So Cindy has asked which one is the housekeeping, and then she said, is that the one clarifying the language? Is that correct? Yes, this is the one that's cleaning up the ordinances, is what you're asking. And yes.
Okay. So we have the public hearing open now. Who would like to start? No, Dan, that's fine. There will be a 3-minute time limit.
Oh, no, I want to talk way longer than that. Dan Pence, I want to speak in favor of the duplex ordinance. I think it potentially addresses a couple of issues. One is long-term rentals, which I think would be really nice to help take some pressure off people here in town. The other thing I like about it is it maintains the feel of Boulder in that you have two dwellings with a single footprint of a house. And so you leave open more space for open space or ag land. And I think that's a really good use of that. I also want to point out that the same fears were brought up when we passed the ADUs, which was 4 or 5 years ago. And someone said, well, what if every single house in Boulder adds an ADU, all of a sudden we've doubled the population? Well, it didn't happen. I don't know how many ADUs have been built in the last 4 or 5 years, but not many. So I don't see this as, you know, exploding the population of Boulder. I think that that's just not a founded or well-founded concern. That's it.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Nobody else is out there waving their hand?
Mm-mm. Oh, Elizabeth is now, but you get her.
Okay.
Hi, this is Jen. I'm Jennifer Gerlings. Thank you very much for the time that you put into this. I mean, we've been talking about this forever, and I want to just acknowledge that this is a great start, and know nothing is perfect. And I appreciate the fact that we have a state law that now is partly dictating what we're doing and what we do today and what we do. It's not like, you know, communities change and laws change with them. That's why we have laws. They are changeable. So whatever we do today, there's nothing that's permanent in this world, including the laws that we make down. But we are doing the best we can to make some laws that will help this community, I feel, in a way that's positive. So I want to just really appreciate what you're doing. And this is could really be related to any of the ones that you've been doing. But thank you so much for getting to the nitty gritty. And I, even though there's, of course, there's lots of questions left to be answered, but we're going to go along and we're going to do this together and we're going to figure it out and we're making some really good progress. And thank you. The other thing, so about the, I wanted to address the other one, that's the average lot size. Again, I feel like this is a good start. It doesn't change the total density or it just shifts things in a much more flexible way, I feel. We're always talking about landowner rights. This gives landowners more control and more ability, more flexibility. And it still means you have 2 units for 10 acres. And it just means that really, I mean, it's I feel like it gives possibilities, adaptability. And so I think that that's a good thing. Hopefully, I would like to think that somebody would actually take advantage of this and say, you know what? Wow, let's do 9 and 1. Great. I would be phenomenal. I would be great. So I would really hope that it gets used and that people do it. So I support it. And then I just kind of want to go back to the housekeeping a little bit. Really glad roads. Wow, super complicated problem. Okay. So I get that. But it does remind me here that we have some things that are being done with driveways maintenance agreements, I think are really problematic. So I'm glad that those issues have been raised. They need to be dealt with. I do see some real problems. I think it's so important that we have some agreements on how roads are going to be private rate, driveways are maintained, but I do see a real problem. Lee's been very clear that you can't come in as a subdivision, take 2 lots, and then require everybody in the rest of the subdivision to do that. I think he's been pretty clear that that's not really what you need to be doing here. I totally agree that there needs to be all kinds of maintenance. We need to figure out a way to deal with that problem, but I see that it's really problematic for the town or the plan commission to kind of get into that area. And I think we've seen that already. So anyway, basically, thank you. It's a lot of work, and I basically just support the fact that you guys are moving forward, I feel like, in a positive direction. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, I guess Elizabeth?
Hi, Elizabeth Julian. I like to reference the first one, which is the housekeeping one, I believe. I apologize because it's kind of a question, but it's a comment and it's something for you all to think about in moving forward. I didn't necessarily think it was for Lee specifically, but for you all as a commission. So not deducting acreage from private driveways created by easements and maintenance agreements will be possible through the ordinance change. Is it also possible to not remove property from private streets through an ordinance change? A public street or easement dedicated as such are maintained with public funds. The private street easement stays with the property owner and the adjacent and affected property owners, like a private driveway, share the maintenance. In that case, the land still belongs to the landowner, not the group of landowners. And therefore, why wouldn't it also be allowed to remain in their total acreage? It seems this would be in the town's best interest, having the property owners have a written maintenance agreement while upholding the street standards according to our town ordinances and the, I always say this wrong, International Wildland Urban Interface Code. I think that's it. Again, is it possible to avoid dedicating acreage when creating a private street with an ordinance change? If not, why? I just want to understand that. Additionally, although based on what Lee said earlier, it might be better to wait on this, as Lee suggested when we discussed street standards, but I wonder why it's necessary, or if it is necessary, to have both private streets and private driveways, or at least why does Boulder have to define them if the International Wildland Urban Interface Code defines them as we have adopted the code. So finally, just I would like to thank all of you for your time and efforts on the proposed changes. The presentation of the background information in the memo with the proposals explicitly noted and the marked changes are appreciated.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Anyone else? Mark, go ahead.
You're doing this in order of the housekeeping and then...
No, you can, I just want you to be able to comment on every one of them, but it would be helpful for us if you're letting us know which one you're going to...
All right, so I'll just reiterate on the density.
Okay.
One, that I kind of like that idea, the average lot size density. I think that's a good idea if it can work. But if it gets, cannibalized or changed, then it could be a kind of a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like the way it's laid out, but if it changes, then I don't like it. If you could do that, and then you can sell off that small lot then, because you need to, you're saying you have to go to Grand Junction, you have to sell that lot off, you gotta do it, right? I don't like that idea. So that's that. So then it comes down to the duplexes. Now, Tina, you said that, these were things you've been working on for a long time. I want to point out this whole duplex thing just came up at the last meeting. And I don't remember ever any meetings where it was discussed that we were going to allow duplexes to be built anyway.
We talked about it even in our housing group. We talked about it.
Okay, in the housing group, but everybody wasn't all the way to all groups, right? And talking about the first one or the last housing group? Or?
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I don't have to, I'm not supposed to comment.
Okay, anyway, this is a part question and part observations. But I was looking at the last housing meeting with the dots in them and such. And right there it says, comments with zero dots, that it was suggested that more duplexes than ADUs, and those receive no dots. That suggestion. Right here on your own documents. Okay, no dots. So that shows that a lot of people like that idea, and people I talked around town particularly like the idea. But I'd like to kind of know where this all came from. That whole idea having duplexes allowed everywhere. That doesn't make any sense. And I wonder, I gotta back up a little bit and talk about the whole way this started is an idea about affordable housing and employee housing and these issues. And back when that started, the whole idea was affordable housing. When we found out what that meant, because there's a state definition for that, that term was kind of mostly dropped. And then we went to this idea of attainable housing. Well, that was never defined. And I don't think you can ever define that because it's such a subjective thing that I just don't think that's even a good term to use in our discussion, because what does that mean? You know, even Curtis Overhands, when he was administrator, he says no such thing as affordable housing. There's no such thing as affordable housing. It's too subjective, right? Okay, not getting enough. So, you know, there is that. Plus, you know, when we first started about this, it was going to be targeted, you know, and there was going to be things like employers supplying housing for their employees, and this is going to be part of the overall plan. It was going to be targeted to reach groups, not to be an overwhelming idea that we were going to have higher density duplexes in every category. And I think that makes no sense.
Okay.
You know, as far as like some of the, you know, Lee kind of said, well, there's not much difference between ADUs and duplexes. I disagree with that. There's a huge difference. The ADU, the quality of life, the EADUs or the IADUs, you know, you have to be a resident here, right? And if you get sick and have to leave, or you want to leave for some other reason, then you should sell that. And then there's this issue of the ADUs go with that. That should be part of the play on it. This idea that they're the same, they're not the same at all. They're not the same at all. And this comment that Lee made, that he argues that it's more out of fear of change than the kind of community we want to live in. I don't think that that's accurate at all.
Okay.
I mean, if you read a vision statement, can I talk?
No, you're over 3 minutes. I'm just going to.
Well, I think I need more than 3 minutes.
Okay.
That's what's allowed, but it's your okay.
So, well, I'll try to wrap it up. I think you get the idea. But, you know, 3 minutes to address this problem is ridiculous, don't you think? So, you know, I don't like it. I think it's bad planning. You know, it doesn't address any of the issues that we started out with, really, because, you know, I was thinking, you know, that anybody can come in here and buy a property and start building duplexes. And this is something we wanted to avoid from the very day we started planning. We talked about how we wanted to avoid attracting speculators and real estate developers. This is an invitation. And that's, we don't want that. I mean, I don't mind having some areas set aside and say, well, this would be a good place for duplexes. You know, this is kind of what zoning is all about. But to say that they're going to be light in every zone, bad idea. You know, but I think that's probably all I'm saying.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Oh, go ahead. Judith Gile speaking. A question for you, Lee. When you talked about the example of average use of a 10-acre lot, a 9-acre, and a 1, would the state law then allow for a duplex on the 9 and on the 1-acre? Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Well, actually, state law would allow for a internal dwelling, an additional internal dwelling, not necessarily a duplex, duplexes.
But I think where Mark is going, that a duplex by design is a side-by-side two dwellings, whereas a rental space inside a single family home has a different visual and aesthetic and impact on the community. I think that might be part of what Mark is looking at, the speculative aspect of building duplexes for the purpose of renting. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Donna.
Great, thank you. And I want to just be as the ones who have said thank you for all this work. It's really great to see things moving forward. And then I think it happens pretty quickly. My comment on duplexes, they are different from ADUs. ADUs are in the space that's already there. I think duplexes are great, and I've been asking for people to think about it for a long time. But I would caution the planners to maybe see if we can't add some architectural to that and not just allow anything, because when we talked about them before, we talked about how you can design them so they seem like a single family home. You don't, and maybe you might need to have some of that before you just allow duplexes without any definition or any kind of constraints. That would be my quick comment on that. My main concern is back to the housekeeping issue. And that is where you want to change. And I probably, this is going to be a question because I probably missed that beginning part, but it's about where you allow the development to happen after the preliminary, but before the final. And but meaning that people can't get a final until there's approval. I feel like that might be really constraintive on developers or people who want to subdivide it, not necessarily put in all the infrastructure and sell or do anything. Maybe someone like even Rachel who wanted to subdivide for her family, and then they might want to put all the infrastructure in later. So I'm a little just confused about why you would require all the infrastructure to go in before a final plat. In every single situation, it seems like it might be constraining in some. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Donna. Dan, do you want to go?
Yeah. Hi, it's Jennifer Bach. First, I want to say I am in support of the average lot size. I think that's a very good solution to, seeing people having been able to break off chunks of large properties and help people who are looking for housing who don't have the means to buy large chunks of property. I like that because it still preserves the density. It just redistributes it. So I'm in support of that. As far as the duplexes go, I'm only partially in support of that. I feel like it shouldn't be everywhere. I wish there was a way we could make clustered areas where it was allowed and then places where it wasn't. I know that's not necessarily fair. It leaves a lot open to interpretation, and that concerns me a little bit. So, I mean, the idea that it might not solve any of the affordable or attainable housing problems because somebody could come and build up duplexes and sell them off to the highest bidder doesn't solve our problems. I feel like we've talked about it periodically throughout the process, but I really don't get the impression that that was where, after our last housing forum, the public was leaning heavily toward. I feel like it was mentioned, and I feel like it has been talked about. I know Lee suggested it many, many meetings ago and over several meetings, but I don't feel like it was one of the forerunners of the solutions. And that's why last meeting, when it was proposed to put it up for public hearing to be given to the town board, it felt a little bit like that particular aspect was out of left field because it wasn't in the forefront of the answers that were being looked at after the housing forums. So my concerns about it is that it won't actually help affordability or attainability. The internal accessory dwelling unit is required by the state, and I think it's great because it does allow a little flexibility with a homeowner, but it also keeps, in a way, the community, you know, the people who are here, not people who live in somewhere else, Phoenix or, you know, California or something, just buying up houses and renting them out to people. 30 days as a long-term rental seems like a short long-term rental, especially when you're considering people who want to come here just for a couple months in the summer. Sometimes it might end up becoming a longer-term short-term rental, in my opinion. So I feel like it has some pickles that we could get into accidentally. And I feel like it's not necessarily time to change it in such a sweeping way. We need to consider more details and figure out how it will help us solve our problems. And if it's the time to do it now, I'm not sure. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thank you for all your comments. This is helpful. I'll make a motion to close the public hearing. I can't make a motion.
Yes, you can. Actually, okay. So, you want a second?
Okay. Go ahead. I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second it. Colleen Thompson.
Can I have a vote?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Shelley, aye.
And Carlson, aye. All right, we are now closed public meeting, and I'm sorry, I forgot that we're going to open the public meeting. I will make a motion to open the public meeting.
The regular meeting.
The regular meeting, the regular public meeting. I have a second.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. All right, so we're in the regular public meeting. Can we start maybe with questions from the commission to Lee in regards to the three ordinances? I think what I'd like to do is to start with the commission with the housekeeping first and see if we can work through any kind of questions that we might have or suggestions. Does anyone want to start?
Okay. I think we could I ask that we respond to a couple of questions that were raised during the public hearing?
Before? Sure, that's possible too. Yeah, okay.
Just to speed things up. So, just the notes I took here. Elizabeth had raised the question about wording to make sure that private streets were not excluded from the lot area. And Lee, I think, confirmed that that is in the wording that you have it.
Yes, the ordinance does differentiate, and it allows the area of private streets to be included in the density calculation.
Okay, thank you.
And so that part of Elizabeth's question has been addressed.
And to the second part, I think, I've recommended that we consider get rid of the distinctions between driveways and private streets. But what that would require is really going into the street standards, which is not in these current revisions. But I think we certainly do respect that comment.
But right now, the way that the whole access part of the ordinance is set up, it allows lots to be created that only have private driveways or private easements. And so, yes, it can be clarified. You can consider consolidating. There are a number of options that we could talk about, but within the context that we are working in right now, without changing a whole bunch of other things, you got to leave that distinction there unless you want to make a whole bunch of other changes.
Correct, I fully agree. That's why I say that would have to be part of the street standards discussion.
Right.
And to address Donna Owens' concern about construction timing, could you, Lee, expand a little bit about the development agreements language that you put into the draft ordinance?
Yes, I can. It is typical for communities to require the improvements to be on the ground before they approve a final plat. And the answer to the timing of it is that you can and are allowed by these amendments to create a development agreement that phases the installation of improvements. And thereby what you would have is a preliminary plat that covers the entire proposed subdivision, and then a number of final plats for each phase of it. I mean, I've worked on not that this is ever going to happen in Boulder. I worked on subdivisions that had 100 final plats, starting with one preliminary, and it went in phases as the infrastructure was installed. And so, you know, to scale it down to Boulder, if I want to create 8 lots, let's say, I could propose a development agreement that says I'm only going to build the road necessary to serve the first 4. And then I'll get a final plat for those once that road's constructed. And if I'm successful in selling those first 4 lots and making some money, then maybe I will do the next 4. So the system, as it's imagined here, and this is very typical, allows a landowner to get preliminary approval of the entire project and then work it out in phases. And that's, like I said, that's typical. It is not required by law per se, although actually the way the new Utah subdivision law works, it probably is required by law. I'd have to think about that when there are changes that are hard to absorb in that new legislation. But at least at the present moment in Boulder, this gives the landowner the flexibility to get approval of the entire subdivision proposal and then build the improvements a piece at a time.
So Lee, this is Colleen. Sorry, John.
Yeah, no, please, no, no.
So while we're talking about that, I kind of had a question on development agreement because that's something that seems kind of new. Would each subdivision have a development agreement for the, or is that like a standard thing? I assume that each one would have different, each subdivision would have a different development agreement.
Yes, the only exception would be a subdivision in which there are no required improvements. So if you imagine that I own 15 acres along the side of a road and I want to split it into 3 5-acre lots, and I don't have to build a road, all that's going to happen is driveways, right? The homes are going to be on septic tanks and wells. Then there doesn't have to be a development agreement because there's nothing, no infrastructure, no facility, no improvement that the developer is required to make.
The planning commission.
And that does, subdivisions like that do happen. A subdivision where the developer, the landowner, is required to put in road to make other types of improvements, then there's going to be a development agreement which will be unique for each one.
Thank you, Lee.
Sure.
Okay, Lee, I know that you probably did not see my red line markup till 20 minutes before the meeting. Have you had to, and I'm wondering, would it be helpful if we took agenda, if we tabled the housekeeping to give you time to look at those red lines, and we could discuss 5, 6, and 7 and then come back to you. Would that help you out?
Well, I think it depends on what you and the rest of the commission want to do. There are certainly discussions that could be had about this. And, you know, you can either propose to amend your red lines in and discuss them at this point in time. But actually, procedurally, I mean, we have a substantive question here about these things and then a procedural question. Procedurally, you have to decide if you want to work on some of these things, you have to decide to table the first set of amendments tonight. Somebody would have to make a motion to table that for consideration at the next regular meeting.
Well, actually, we could table it till later in the meeting. That's procedurally allowed. So I'm asking.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you can, well, you know, you don't even have to officially table it, I don't think, at this point. You're free to discuss these things in order. You know, your chair suggested starting with 1, but that isn't required by anything. So if the commission wants to skip on to some of the other topics, which honestly, I would suggest you do, because these questions we're talking about with the housekeeping amendments are small, detailed questions, not big, substantive questions for the most part. And I think that everyone would be well served, the people who are attending and the commission as well, if you talked about the two big issues before you get bogged down in details.
Well, you want to make a motion?
Yeah, so I'm going to make a motion that we temporarily, so to put this in context before I make the motion. Today, I prepared a fairly detailed set of markups on the housekeeping. A lot of them are just very simple grammatical things like adding ands that were missing and fixing A's and the's and things like that. But there are some things that will require some policy discussion. I would like to let Lee have, and he did not see that document until 20 minutes before this meeting, because I only finished it an hour before. So I would like to suggest that we table the discussion of the housekeeping until we have completed items 5, 6, and 7 on the agenda, and then we can come back to it.
Can you make that a motion, please?
Yeah, so I will make the motion that we table the discussion of the housekeeping amendments for till later in the meeting and take items 5, 6, and 7 in the agenda and then come back to the housekeeping amendments.
5, 6, and 7. You mean go through the Great Planning Commission meeting workshop, 5, 6 schedule?
We still be here.
All those?
Is yeah.
That what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And then come back to it.
Yeah, that'll give Lee some time to look over those comments that he barely has seen.
So are we tabling it till later in the meeting, or are we tabling it till next meeting?
Tabling it till later in the meeting after we've done those items, which gives him some time to read my remarks. So he has time to respond to them.
Read them right now?
Lee can read those while we're doing the discussing Robert's rules and BES housing.
Can I ask Lee, is that going to work for you?
Sure. I don't know that it means we'll be able to act on some of John's red lines or even on the whole thing. But there are a couple of things in there. There's some things in there that are very minor, as John said, and some other things that really aren't minor. Let me get through them. And I really think that with the public here and after the hearing, you need to get on to the issues of averaging and duplexes and decide what the commission's going to do about those so that there's some type of closure on those big issues for those people who are participating. So yeah, I will take a look at the red lines and be ready to say whatever I end up saying in a bit.
Okay, so I had a motion to go on to, no second actually.
Do you want to still keep the other two ordinance?
We'll come back to that discussion after those.
Do you have a second to John's motion?
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
So we're going to go on. The second means that we're considering going on to 4, 5, and 6, which is the
5, 6, and 7.
5, 6, and 7, which is the scheduling. 5 is following up on the Great Planning Commission meeting. 6 is scheduling and registration information for the town council's Robert rules. And 7 is reports on the BAS. That's the Boulder Elementary School housing.
And then we'll come back to 4.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that?
So we're going to continue with the duplex amendment and also the lot size amendment right now.
No,
that John was actually
after we do these
the whole thing.
Can
we just finish the
okay?
I amend that we finish the house that I mean, we're the duplex and the average lot size amendments while we're sitting here.
Okay, before. Okay.
So
I have an amendment.
This discussion.
Okay. I will second her amendment to my motion.
Okay. Any discussion, more discussion on this? Okay.
I didn't hear where we landed there. The motion is.
The motion is to start with the duplex and the ADU and the average lot sizes before going on to the housekeeping.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, can I have a vote from the commission, please?
Pauline Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Jelly, aye.
And Carlson, aye. All right, we're going to start with, let's start with the duplexes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, John, go ahead.
All right. Okay, on duplexes, I hear a consistent comment from in various forms, but I've heard it a number of times. And as soon as we say duplexes, people are thinking of suburban style townhouses. That is not necessarily what a duplex looks like. A duplex can be a single family house with an upstairs and a downstairs. It could be a single family house where the garage has been converted into a dwelling unit. I own a fourplex in Salt Lake that from the outside looks exactly like the other big early 1900s craftsman houses on the street. The four mailboxes are inside the hallway. There's only one front door. It looks no different than a single family house. The one challenge we have is that the Utah legislature did pass a law that limits the ability of a town to impose architectural standards. But, and this I would have to carefully research and ask Lee to help me research it, and probably our attorney to help research it. But I believe the way it's worded, that is only applies to single family dwellings. And if we give a bonus incentive, like allowing a duplex, we might be able to impose architectural standards. So I think that that was a very valid comment, and it's something that we would need to research how much we would be allowed to do under state law. But what I do want to remind people is that a duplex does not necessarily need to look like a side-by-side traditional townhouse with two garages sticking out to the street and two front doors. And I don't think that's what somebody would build in Boulder. Regarding the fear you had of speculators, if I was a speculator, I would want to build a high-end house that I could sell for top dollar. If somebody wants to create housing, they might buy something converted to a duplex, but there's nothing that stops a speculator right now from buying 5 acres and building a $750,000 house, and between the land and the house, now he sells it for $1 million. That's perfectly legal right now. So I don't think that the opposing duplexes would really defend us against the thing that we really don't want. And as I say, I think it is really a distinction without a difference. Does it really impact the town whether there are two people renting in the same structure, especially if it's an existing structure that's been converted to a duplex, which is probably more likely than anyone building a duplex from scratch in this town, given the high cost of construction. That's more likely to be a conversion or a remodel. So that's the question I ask. Does it really harm the town if somebody remodels an existing house to have two separate kitchens, two bathrooms, two dwelling units?
And then in a duplex, the option for someone to partner up with someone else to buy a piece of property and do a duplex would also be an option, which would be more affordable. I think that the comments about the fact that there needs to be some regulation on how it looks, we probably should think about that. I wish we could have the option of sending things forward to the town and seeing if they want us to continue working on this stuff, because it's a lot of work. And so sending something to the town to see what they say, and then they vote it in. You know, it's I think that's
Elizabeth, are you on?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, as our liaison, do you see any problem making a presentation on these draft ordinances as part of your report on what the Planning Commission is doing to get some feedback next month?
I'm more than happy to present that to get feedback.
And I'd be happy to be there with you to help with the presentation. And Tina, me too.
Okay.
Yeah. It seems important.
Yeah.
It does seem important.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, because I still, when we did the ADUs, and I'm not, this is my concern basically is, when we talked about ADUs and having somebody that lived here in town, I still have a little bit of an issue. And I know Leah's brought this up as far as having somebody that doesn't live here own an ADU and be able to rent both of them out. And that's my own issue. I'm wondering if we could put duplexes in more of low density, where there's more open space for duplexes. Another, that's another thing too, instead of leaving it open to have duplexes on a 1 acre parcel, which I think what we're doing right now is so that any piece of property could have a duplex. Is that how we're leaving it?
The way it's worded now, yes, because an IADU is allowed on a 1 acre lot.
True. Yeah, sure. Okay, that's really my only comment. So, yeah.
Any other commissioners have a comment on that?
This is Elena. I'm okay with the idea of duplexes. I would caution us to not put too many restrictions on in terms of what density they can be allowed in and what they need to look like. I think that it's important that we try to stop making attainable housing options harder. I think that requirements about how they look end up being more costly a lot of the time. I think we need to stop creating these situations where if you could afford, you know, a whole lot or a whole house or a whole whatever, you can do whatever you want. And if you can't, you have to do this harder, more expensive way. I think we should be shying away from those things.
Thank you. Shelley? Or who's Boulder Town?
Ian, but Shelley, ask Shelley.
Shelley?
She's just Boulder Town.
Yes.
Do you have any comment?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But thank you.
Okay, to move the meeting along, what I would like to recommend is that we table action on the duplexes for now to give us time to research the question of what degree we can impose architectural controls and bring a revised version of the duplex and incorporate other feedback we received tonight, mainly the architectural controls. We need to research what the state law would allow us to do. And if it's possible, we could see if we could approve this draft ordinance and bring it back next month. So the motion would be to basically send it back for staff work, at table it for this month and bring it back after staff work.
Okay. Right. I'll second that, Colleen. Okay, it's been moved and second. Any other comments on that?
Is that something that everyone wants, is architectural standards on the commission? Because I feel like we had one or two public comments about that. It doesn't seem that significant to me.
I think there needs to be more discussion on the duplexes in general, is my opinion.
Yeah.
But, I mean, including whatever.
And I'm not saying that I'm against it. I think because we have had some questions on it tonight, and I'm just saying I'd like to maybe see it tabled just for another month to go over it a little bit more. Not against it.
Any other comments? Okay, it's been moved and second to table the duplex part of this ordinance, or the duplex ordinance. Can I have a vote, please?
John, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
Elena, no.
Shelley, yes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Elena, did you say?
I said no or nay or object or whatever.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, so motion passes. All right, now the next one is the average lot size.
I don't think I have anything on average lot size. I think I'm okay with that.
Is anyone talking?
I don't, this is Colleen, I don't have anything right now on average lot size. I too feel like we can send this on to the town and see what they think, and they'll send it back to us, and if they don't like it. But I think we should give it a shot. That's my comment.
I have a couple of comments. This is Elena. I think all of us know this, but just for anyone in the public, I just want to mention that when I was compiling the information on that forum in June about what people were interested in, the average lot size thing got the most interest by a huge margin. There was something like 46 dots on the page for that one. So yeah, just wanting to mention that was really popular at that. I really like the idea in general. I think it opens up a lot of options. I have mixed feelings about it can never happen in that area again. I can see the value in that. And I also wonder if perhaps we should consider having maybe like a timestamp on that or something. I think that, things change and the future in Boulder will change and the housing situation will change. And something about like it just never, ever being able to happen again. I think more likely it'll be smaller lots that can't be redivided based on the zoning anyway. But I think about like if there's one that's 20 acres, for example, I'm like, would it be a problem in 20 years when housing is inevitably even harder? Would it be a problem in 20 years for that 20 acre lot to go down to a 10 and two fives again, or two tens or something like that? There's something about the never ever again that makes me a little uneasy, as long as it fits the zoning the next time.
I think, although Lee said it can only happen once, when I actually read the way he wrote it, it only says that the basis for average lot size calculation shall be based on the total area of the parcel or lot being divided on the date of this section. So one could take a 20 acres now and divide it into two tens. Well, that meets the 5 acre average. And then at some later time could divide each of those tens into two fives, because it's still based, the average is based on the size of the parcel that you started with. So there is no, it can only happen once language in here. It's only that it can, the specific fear, and I'll take a second to describe it, but somebody could game the system and do a 20 acres into a 1 and a 19, and then come back and do a 1 and an 18, and then a 1 and a 17, and eventually end up with 10 lots, which is what we're trying to prevent by saying it has to be based on the original area. But right. There is no never again. Unless Lee finds it there, but I don't see it. That language isn't there.
I guess it says lot size averaging may be applied to any area only once, which makes me think that you can't do it on the whole thing. But if I'm wrong.
At the end, it does actually. It is there.
Isn't it free?
Where's it only once?
Right above that. Scroll up just a little bit. Right at the bottom of that average lot size paragraph.
Applied to an area only once. At the very end, it does say what you said to John, but it also adds that.
Yeah. And I can see, I totally see the danger in that. And I guess I'm wondering about some sort of middle ground, because I do think we want to avoid that situation of someone just doing it over and over again. I guess that's why I wonder if maybe there could be something like, you can do it again in 10 years or something. I just think about, yeah, maybe somebody with a big ranch dividing a piece off, like a bigger piece off for their kid that wants to keep ranching, and then a couple smaller ones off to make some money. And then, you know, in 40 years, is that kid not allowed to subdivide again, if that's what makes sense for them, to divide something off for their kid or for a brother or whoever? I don't know.
Would you like to make a motion to just strike item D? I think that C is adequate to prevent gaming the system.
Wait, item D.
Let me.
That's the one that says lot averaging may be applied to an area only once. Okay. So would you like to make a motion to strike that, Elena?
Give me 1 second. I want to look at it and see D with my eyeballs before I do that. Okay.
In fact, this points out the importance that I think before we send it to town council, we all need to make sure we've carefully read it.
So yeah, D would be easy.
I'm not seeing it in here as D. Let's see.
So,
yeah, it also says it up top too. So I guess we'd have to strike both of those.
53.119 lot average in its item, it's letter D under that list.
ABR. Right. I see that. And it also says it above where we looked before, at the very, or not, I guess not the very beginning, but the big paragraph at the top of the. Let's see what page this is. I can't tell. Under 152006, it also says it at the end of that sentence. I suppose I'm not necessarily looking to strike it right away. I'm more looking to have a conversation about, like, is there an in-between? Because I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea to not be able to just do it repeatedly.
Okay.
And I think, Elena, the way that you're bringing it up is so great, because I think there's two versions of looking at it, right? So like what John is saying, if it doesn't have the once and anyone can go through, and like you said, this year I'm going to do one in 19, next year I'm going to do one in 18, but then it's so easy to use a family. So like this year, my grandpa gave me 10 acres. Next year, I'm going to divide it. But instead it's like, I was able to have this, then 10 years from now, I separated it from my kids, 10 years from that, I separated it for my grandkids, something those two versions of
I this. Think, and I don't necessarily have wording to propose right now. I guess what I'm just looking for is, yeah, something in between, being able to just do it in repetition and never again is, I guess, what I'm looking for.
Elizabeth, go ahead.
I wonder if there's a way you could do it that it is at this time of the first subdivision, that whatever that acreage percentage, so if you're starting with a 20 acre lot, that it can only ever be divided into four, because that's the average, right? There's 4 5-acre lots. And so somehow being written that when it's divided, that is included in the deed. So if it divides from 20 to 1 in 19, when it gets divided again, it only has the option, there's only 3 more divisions total left, right?
And so
somehow that could solve this. I don't know legally how you would write that into the subdivision ordinance, but it's maintaining the integrity of the goal of keeping the average lot size at the time that it was first divided. And so it doesn't matter how many times or the time frame that they're divided. But if you have a 20 acre lot, the goal is with the average lot sizing is that you never have more than 4 5-acre lots or equivalent, right? So you can never divide it more than 4 lots total, regardless if there's a 1 acre lot and then 2 years down you do. So it's 1 in 19 and then it's now 2 in 17, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Never divided more. And I don't, again, I wouldn't know how to write that, but that's a possibility to not put a limit on the amount of times and not allow people to create or find loopholes in the intention of this.
Okay. Actually, I found another only one. So I think that this needs some wordsmithing. So let's let's identify we have a concern about the only once language. I have one clarification on the whereas is, and that is that I think we need a whereas that clearly states that it reminds everyone that allowing an average lot size equal to the current minimum does not increase the total number of lots allowed. That should probably be in the whereas statements so that people at the town council see that. Are there other corrections that people are concerned about before we send this back for wordsmithing?
I otherwise like it a lot.
I'm sorry, Elena.
I just said I otherwise like it a lot, and I appreciate Lee focusing on this one since it was so popular at the meeting.
Me too. I agree, Pauline Thompson.
So
I don't think it's very, if I may jump in, it's not very hard to add a whereas, as John suggested. And I think that the idea that you can make divisions in the future as long as you stay within the original number of divisions that were possible is a good idea. And I would have to think for a minute or two about exactly how to word that, but it's not obviously not impossible to do. So if you wanted to table this until the next meeting with the direction to me to make those changes, I will make the changes and get it out to you. And you could then act on it to send it forward if that's what you want to do at the next meeting. But if those are the only two changes, they don't do anything to change the intent or to require another hearing. They're simply ways of clarifying what's already here. And I think that we could get that language in there, and then you guys could act on it at the next meeting and get this much at least on to the town council.
Can I ask another question of you, Lee? Do we need to have in the ordinance some way in which it's clear how this process would happen? Like,
it's clear that they have to bring you that proposal as part of the preliminary plat.
Right.
You know, that's up to the landowner to say, I'm going to use this option that exists, because they always have the option of doing the fives, right? We have not taken that away. We will see. I mean, I would like to believe that this will be used because it helps some people out, but there's no guarantee that anybody's going to use it. And it will play into future discussions about, the next round of issues. But I don't think we need to have a specific process for this. That's up to the, it's in the table of development standards that they can do this. And so you'll see an application and they'll either do it or not. And you go forward from there. It doesn't change how you're going to review the subdivision. You would just see which option they've decided, whether they're doing minimum fives uniformly or averaging, and then it's up to the Planning Commission. And that language that Mark Nelson pointed out is kind of vague, is there to help you look at the lot shapes and forms and how it fits with the terrain in terms of how they averaged it. And while that language is hardly perfect at this point, it gives you the scope you need to comment on and ask for changes in the exact layout of how they average. So I think you're set. I like the idea of adding a whereas just for clarity. And then I like the way that it was, Elizabeth, I guess it was explained that we keep the basis, but we don't say it can only be done once. And I don't think that's very hard language to come up with. I just need to have a moment to get my head clear send you a new draft.
Okay, so can I have a...
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion to table, but before I do, I'd like to invite everyone on the commission. It shouldn't just be me giving feedback to Lee. I think every one of us should read this very carefully, and if we spot something that causes a concern or something, I'm encouraging everyone to send Lee an email and say, hey, I think that there's a problem with the way you worded the definition of something or whatever they see. But I invite everyone, Shelley, Colleen, you know, to give Lee feedback if you spot some other problems in this. So the motion will be to return this draft to Lee for further wordsmithing based on input from the Planning Commission tonight and any additional input he receives offline from commission members.
Okay, that sounds great. Can I have a second for that?
I'll make a second. Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion? All right, can I have a vote?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Tina, aye. Thanks. All right, are we ready to go?
Are you ready to talk about the red lines, Lee?
No, we have to go to, I thought we were
going to
go to.
Okay, yeah, we want to do the next, the others, and then come back to housekeeping.
I'm kind of hoping that we can, if Lee's ready, we can just.
We could take a vote. We could take a vote. Let Lee, since there's a time zone issue here, you want to do red lines now?
I think that we should start the conversation about the red lines now, without feeling pressure to finish it. And the thing with the red lines that John has made is that many of them deal with really detailed wording issues. And so without the Planning Commission having the red lines in front of them and having had time to read them, I'm hesitant to suggest any action. But I do want to just comment on a couple of pieces of this. Yes?
They need to make a vote first. I guess I was wrong. I thought that we had voted to do, but anyway.
You had voted to do the other things first, so you probably ought to just go ahead and do the others first. I will hang in here. Hopefully you can do them quickly.
So I'm going to make a motion that we change what we changed back and insert the amendments that we were working on and do that now before we do in its original order. And that's the motion.
So we're finishing item 4 before going on to 5 and 6.
Thank you. Can I have a second for that?
I'll second.
Okay, John, second. Any discussion? Okay, can I have a vote from the commission?
Colleen, aye.
John, aye.
Shelley, I, Tina, I. Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to go on to basically it's the
house. So, do the commission members have the red line now?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to just hit some high points of this because we're going to have to come back to it. But there's some things I want the commission members to think about in this. And so we're just going to do a quick little list here. Some of what John has recommended, I find unnecessary or, that it doesn't make enough of a change or improvement to do. One that I think I disagree with is the definition of private driveways, which John has suggested needs to be changed. Without the language that he has suggested striking, the definition doesn't really help anyone understand what conditions a private driveway might exist under. And so as you guys get this and go through it, I want you to look at the definition of private driveways. That's a pretty important one, because while people have suggested maybe there isn't a difference or much difference between private streets and driveways. The ordinance as it stands now does make a distinction. And I think that if we talked it through, we would see that there is a need for both of those things to exist. Going on down, the red lines, you can read them yourselves and see what you think. As I said, I think some of them are unnecessary, that the existing, what's here existing, is as good as the proposed change. If you go down into 152.041B, which talks about the contents of a preliminary subdivision plat, John has one policy discussion there that doesn't have to be resolved at the time of these amendments, because these amendments are just saying what has to be on the plat, not who does what at a particular moment. But that does need to be straightened out within the next 18 months. I mean, it will be straightened out by state law, really. So that's in five of that 041 section. In three, John zaps building envelopes, which if we're going to go ahead and accomplish our goals, we're going to have to use building envelopes. They need to be here. And it is always up to or possible for the developer, the landowner, to propose building envelopes. And so we should not zap those out of there. He replaced it with saying that you should show septic tank and greenfield test locations, and while land associated building envelopes is applicable, I guess that works if you add the septic drain field test there. But we need to think about building envelopes. Probably nothing much wrong with the change. The proposed red line in number seven, there's nothing wrong with that proposal, except that it's different in kind than the rest of the list. The rest of the list is a list of what has to be on the plat, and this is directions about who must sign. And so it belongs in our considerations, but I'm not sure that it belongs in this list right there. Running on down, I'm not completely clear. I guess there's no change proposed in the discussion of culinary water, just as a comment. And then John says that the road standard stuff that is here has not necessarily been thoroughly vetted by the Planning Commission. That's probably true. On the other hand, I don't see anything in there that is not reasonable, not valid. And so I would suggest that we come back to it. If the Planning Commission members have any questions, I would also suggest that maybe if it would be helpful and clarify and get us in the right order of business, that maybe at the next meeting we need to talk about the actual road standards above or street standards above and beyond what is here. So yeah, that, and then through the rest of it, there's some discussions. There's a discussion about subdivision. What does having a subdivision that makes no improvements mean?
Lee, and, when you talk about those, can you say exactly where they are? You're talking about the subject, but just so that everyone can follow along. Like, what
okay,
exactly
it's, I'm trying to get through here. 152.46, going on down to item four, or below item four, but the comment that John made is applicable to pretty much that whole section. My sense is that what's missing here is a definition of required improvements.
Great.
But there is a list in chapter 152 of what those improvements might be. So there it's implicitly defined. And I don't find much fault with this language. I think if you think clearly about a required improvement would be something that the town insists that the subdivider do, then we probably need a definition there, or maybe we need a definition. But I don't, I think this simplifies the one lot thing adequately the way it is. And I think that's consistent with the input that we received, which is make it easier. It goes back to what Elena said earlier about the duplexes, is that we can, when we are able, shy away from things that make it harder to do simple projects. But the Planning Commission just needs to read 046 there and see if you understand it clearly. When you get them, read John's comments, and we can come back to this and see what works best for the Planning Commission. Going on down here, it's a long ways through to the next red line. I need to I see what John is saying here. 153, 190. So we're way down towards the end of this now. Repeal and replace as follows. Okay, that's actually turned red, but it's what I wrote. So that's not actually a comment. It just got to be red somehow. So that's it. To review quickly, I need to have Planning Commission think about private driveways and their role in the world and their utility. They're a big deal the way the ordinance got written, because they expanded what subdividing, what type of subdividing was allowed. So we've got to make sure that we're clear on that. The road standards, I think John's point is that they need some further discussion. So I would hope that people would spend a minute with 041H and see if that seems clear and useful to them. If we then manage to add a set of genuine design and construction standards to these more generic road standards. Yes.
I could add a few things real quick to wrap it up. So yes, I think this needs some wordsmithing. I have no problem with leaving in that wording on the private driveway and things like that. I mean, this is all for discussion, all for input. One thing I'll note is that right now you've got lot line definitions and subdivision definitions, both in the lot averaging ordinance and in the housekeeping ordinance, and the wording is slightly different, and both differ from state law. So we definitely need to figure out what definitions we want for lot line adjustment and subdivision.
Which one is that?
That's back up at the beginning in the amendments to chapter 152. And what's happening here, and I thought that they were identical, but is trying, because I cut and pasted them over. I wanted what's in the zoning and what's in the subdivision to match for now, because we have separate sets of definitions in both ordinances.
That's fine. We just need to make sure they're consistent.
And so we have there I don't spend a lot of time. If I can make it simpler and more clear than state law, I make it simpler and more clear than state law. But those definitions, don't have to be added to chapter 152 at all at this time, if that's what you decide. I was just trying to make the two chapters match so that they would, there would not be any chance of contradiction between them.
No. Yeah. All right. I think I hope we can have time to get to my PowerPoint, in which case that'll be a good segue into street standard discussion. So I hope we get time to get to that before we run out of energy.
What we're going to see, what planning for what we're going to do next. I see.
Yeah. As far as the subdivisions requiring no infrastructure, it seems what we have been requiring is water, we're required a street base, a street access, new driveways if you're serving multiple lots, fire hydrants, and a water main lines extension. But we can consider whether we want to put that kind of language into defining what a lot requiring no infrastructure is. But that it, I realize that that it was subject to misinterpretation as worded. So take a good look at that. I think these, I'm willing to, you know, you've made good points. I think we can just trust you to look at right. these and incorporate them. So
why don't I think that on this question of the subdivisions with no improvements, that's language everybody ought to read and decide how clear it either is or isn't. It was not very clear. I think it was less clear before than it is now, but I also understand that it might be made more clear by defining what we mean by required improvements. But that's one piece of this that everybody needs to read and think about, because the benefit of doing this is that it makes some single lot subdivisions simpler, requires less process, less time before the council for that landowner. And I've seen one lot subdivisions that cause problems. For the most part, we need to make simple things, or at least simpler things, more simple if we can. And that was the intent here. So read it and think about it. And we'll come back to it. And I would rather just have you guys read these in light of John's red lines than have me make any changes, or at least very many changes. I might send you a memo with a couple of thoughts on this. But the important thing is for the Planning Commission to read this before the September meeting and see where we come down. And with that said, I think that it would be beneficial to let John talk about the next steps, hopefully briefly. I'm gonna take my leave unless there is some specific question or request for me, and let you guys talk about next steps.
Great.
Thank you. I have one tiny thing, and that's only to make sure. So when he says to be ready for the next meeting, having things ahead of time, like a whole red line document, a few days before the meeting, not a couple hours, just because then everyone has the time to review it. So the homework is amazing, and then no one has the time to look at it. So making sure that when you do these things, having your input and then having it ready so that there is a full conversation, like Lee has the ability to see it, and then everyone's prepared with it. So just trying to make sure that everyone's ready a couple days before the meeting is a better way of stating than the meeting.
Yes. Thank you, Jessica. However, I will say I have worked probably about 40 hours in the last 2 weeks on Planning Commission stuff. And this memo was completed 2 hours before the meeting. And I realized people weren't seeing the red line, so I had to make a PDF, and that came out an hour before. So sometimes the work does take place right before the meeting. Everybody should please make sure everyone gets the PDF, yeah, which printed in color does show things correctly.
Right.
So I think right now only Tina has that.
Yeah.
So when you send it to me, you've been for the team, right? So
yeah,
I will distribute that.
Yeah, because these guys didn't get to see it either, right?
No. Well, not that I know.
Yeah.
So no, Elena.
Okay.
I think as long, you know, in my mind, yes, as long as you're not expecting anyone to take any action on something that appears at the last minute that no one had a chance to read, I mean, it kind of keeps the conversation moving, but there's no requirement that anyone act on what you just
announced. Okay, so I will make a motion that we also table the housekeeping amendment, housekeeping ordinance change for next month, and ask people to review my comments plus the rest of the document and send any feedback to Lee if they have questions or additional concerns.
So, and maybe I have one, sorry.
Okay.
I had one more, and that was just that I had talked, sorry, Michael, the attorney, was going to be here tonight. He got called into Lois Town Council meeting.
I told him that I didn't think this was at the state where you wanted to involve him yet, just because you guys do seem through the process. But when you are ready, if you feel like it's now or after you've gone through a few more phases, we can also send this on to Michael. I haven't yet.
Yes.
But when you are ready, then we can include the attorney. I just didn't think he was ready yet to go to the attorney.
And I think we should, as a routine matter, send our draft ordinances to the attorney before we send them to the town council.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought. So I just wanted to make that part clear that
when
you are ready, just know that we have that part too now.
And can I jump back in with reference to that discussion when I hadn't managed to find the leave button yet? You guys moved to move the one set of amendments ahead, if I understand what you did, which would be the averaging amendments. And those, when you do that, the chair is the person to do this with the help of another member, need to compose a letter of transmittal to the town council so that Jessica can then put it on their agenda with that cover letter saying, and I think the cover letter should very briefly, maybe pulling it out of the memo I wrote, say, hey, here's the reason why we're proposing this ordinance. In the case of the averaging one, you can certainly say what Elena mentioned earlier, that it had tremendous support in our public meetings, and we're asking the town council to adopt it. But there does need, beyond the motion that was made and approved, there needs to be a letter of transmittal that reflects that. And that way, Jessica will have something to send out to the council.
They didn't vote to move anything along. Elizabeth has agreed to get feedback.
Oh, that's right. I'm sending you guys. That's right. I'm sending you guys two changes to that. Okay. Well, what I said applies in September then. Alrighty. I'm tired and I'm headed out.
So one addendum, we don't really have a defined process as far as like at what point you guys involve the town attorney. Sometimes in the past they've wanted to have the town attorney look at it before the town really gets into
that's
it.
That's kind of what I thought, but I wasn't sure.
But yeah, we don't have anything like in set. Okay. So that's kind of up to you and me to decide how we work that.
Yeah.
I think it would be very helpful for the town to have the lawyer already looking at it before it's actually in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he probably should send it back to us with changes.
And Elizabeth has her hand up. I think that's new.
Elizabeth, did you?
I was just going to say that I think it is a good recommendation when you send it on to the town council with the memo like Lee suggested, that at that same time it's sent to the attorney would be my suggestion. So that way, if he has feedback and comments, that they're given to the town council at the time that they're discussing it and seeing it and not afterwards.
That's good. Yeah. We'll go with that. Okay. That sounds good. All right.
Wow, you made it. Wow.
Okay. Okay, so the five is a follow-up on the great commission meeting that John and Elizabeth and I did, and I think I want to wait to talk about that because I haven't even had a mindset to really get that together, so I'm going to make a motion to pass that one to on
to the next meeting.
So I'll second that.
It's been moved in second. Is there any discussion? Probably not. Can I have a commission vote on that, please?
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Elena, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Shelley, Tina, aye. Okay, we're moving on. We'll follow up with that. Scheduling of registration for the Robert Rules that's been sent to us many times. I hope everybody is actually getting on there. Is anybody having trouble with that?
Are you talking about the schedule? Like there's a poll.
There's a poll.
That poll?
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I did.
It worked. Okay. If anybody is having any problems with figuring that one out, please let me know. We all should be there if at all possible.
And I can give an update on that if people need it.
No, it's actually in a poll to figure out when we can actually all hopefully be there, including the town.
And the Board of Adjustment, I've included them in the forwarding, but I haven't heard back from anybody. Yeah. So
I can give an update of who's participated if you need it.
Okay. No, not now, but yeah.
For the benefit of the public, let me make two quick clarifications. One is the town council extended the deadline and decided we will do this as a combined group rather than registering individually, which saves a great deal of money, and that will be open to the public. Mm-hmm. The public will have to register, but since it will be a quorum notice meeting, the training session will be open to the public, plus the advantage of having the public be also educated in Robert's rules.
Some of that is correct and some of that is incorrect. So just for clarification, the town council at the meeting last Thursday postponed the training deadline, and it was so that we could do a combined work meeting and have it actually live and not self-paced. The town council, planning commission, and administrative staff will participate in the work meeting. All other appointed boards and committee members for town council candidates are strongly encouraged to participate. The training will be open to the public. However, the public is not participating. They will not be. It is just a view only, whether they're view only in person or view only on Zoom. We're paying per person, but it's only for appointed and elected town council or town people. And those that are also are running to be elected officials. There's a description of it that has been passed around. The link and the poll is open to anybody. So I know as a town council member, I shared it with all of my department committees because they are all invited. Anyone from the public, when the poll is decided, it's going to be concentrating on the town council, planning commission, and administrative staff's preferences and availability, but anybody can participate in the poll, and I can put it in the chat if you all want.
Why don't you send it to me on the Pegboard? Then it's more likely to get out that way. Okay. Elizabeth, did you hear what I said?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So is there any other comments on that? Robert's rules training will be happening. Okay. The next thing is the progress report on the Boulder Elementary School housing.
Yes. And again, this was another last minute thing. I finally, this afternoon, got a hold of Lane Meekum, and I got a clarification. So, through Jared Brems, we sent the draft proposal that Boulder Community Alliance, basically Josh Ellis and I, came up with for a proposal. We sent it to Lane Meekum, who's the Garfield School District business agent, because I felt it was important to get him in the loop right away to be thinking about all the contractual and legal and business administrative things that affect the school district. He came back to Jared with a draft interlocal agreement, is what he called it, which basically encapsulated much of our proposal. The confusion there was the way he had written it. It showed Boulder Town, not Boulder Community Alliance, being the partner for building the project. So I finally got a hold of Lane this afternoon by phone, and he clarified, no, that was his misunderstanding of the proposal. And it was fine for Boulder Community Alliance as a civic nonprofit to be the partner that would do the fundraising, that manage the construction and so forth. So that's enormous progress. What that does is throws into our court the whole issue of legalizing RVs for long-term employee housing. Mm-hmm. That's the point. That's the thing that would keep us right now from building a RV pad for employee housing at the elementary school property, is our ordinances don't allow that. So this will become now, I would recommend it to the commission to put on the agenda for future meeting to start working on an ordinance change to allow a long-term use of RVs for employee housing. That's our progress.
Right, and maybe this has already been, is there a different definition for like RVs versus like tiny houses? Like they're the same size, same spec, but like, is there a different verbiage or like, are they included in each other or? They are.
And a tiny house does not have wheels necessarily.
Yeah.
They don't. I mean, you'll wheel your tiny house, and most modulars are the same way. You have to take the wheels off once they get there.
Okay.
Or yes. An RV, that wouldn't be required.
Right. It could be a camper trailer, a pickup truck trailer with hookups. We have to figure out what we're going to allow. Some of them are pretty luxurious. These big motorhomes, But what we proposed there was a pad big enough for the largest of RVs that you see in campgrounds, with a septic tank and other utilities sized for a future house on the lot. So that was a proposal we made. The big ordinance change at this time would be simply allowing. We now under our RV parks, we don't allow them in the moderate density zone. And we don't allow them for more than 180 days. So those are the sorts of things we'd have to change.
Is it just one pad or two pads?
At this point, it's a single pad, although that is a good question. You know, if somebody actually wanted to squeeze two vehicles in there, would we allow it?
And is the school in a medium residential zone, or is because it's state property, it's immune from...
It's MDR, and until about 2 years ago, it was exempt from our ordinances, but then the legislature changed that, and now school districts are subject to local zoning. But anyway, I think the big progress was basically that the business agent has said that, is supportive, it'll ultimately be a school board decision to approve it, but he didn't raise any objections that would make us substantially modify the proposal. So probably what I should do is get that proposal to be distributed to the planning commission, and then you could start that process of considering how do we modify the ordinances to accommodate that. And it'll be slightly, Lee did previously write a memo that was envisioning as something a little bit different than the current proposal. But Lee's previous memo becomes a good place for him to start helping us rewrite that ordinance.
The previous meeting, yes.
Yeah, that he did a previous Boulder Elementary School memo. So why don't I pull all that together and send it to you? We can recirculate it.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. Just for like Jess's comment about tiny homes and stuff, there in our ordinance, it does say for RVs or travel. That they can't be motorized, and so you need to probably review some of the ordinance.
Yeah, there's quite a, the 180 days, the motorized, the widows. Yeah,
but they can be travel trailers if they are pulled. They can't have motors attached to it for long term, so you will need to look at the ordinance.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, and yes, we definitely, you're an excellent ordinance reader, so yes, help us find those things. So that was, I think, great progress finally.
My second grade teacher lives in a mobile home at school.
Okay,
the next on the agenda is a discussion on state mandate for the subdivision ordinance.
Yeah, okay, Alpeg, could you bring up the PowerPoint?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. A second here for that screen sharing.
Wait a minute. It was right here. Hold on a second.
Okay. While we're waiting for that, any other questions about the school housing?
No, I think I need to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, at least now we've got the community alliance and the school business agent on the same page, and that gives us a much greater confidence in moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
there is
RV, or another
that was years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Peg. Okay, so what I want, this presentation is entirely aimed at inviting everyone to get involved and thinking about these issues. I'm not trying to prescribe anything. I'm trying to raise issues and get people thinking about things that we're going to have to be discussing. And we have basically 15 months after this meeting to the deadline where we have to come into compliance with the new state law. Larger towns have to come into compliance at the beginning of the year. We have till the end of 24. So we need to identify goals and outline what we have to do, develop a timeline for working on each item. And in my experience in doing big projects is if you can get to the point where you can list everything you have to do, you are substantially well into the getting the work done. We always used to say that was about 20%, was just figuring out exactly what you had to do. And as I say, you're all involved, you're all welcome to get involved in doing the preparation work between the meetings because there will need to be a lot of it. So second slide.
Let's see.
Okay.
I'll just use my
mouse.
I can't find the key.
Okay, there we go. Okay, so our favorite Senate Bill 174 specifies a very strict timeline for subdivision approval and greatly reduces the role of the Planning Commission and the Town Council. Right now, as we all know, our ordinances are confusing and internally contradictory. But under the new procedure, it is going to be very much check off the boxes. If it meets the ordinance, it has to be approved. And it's approved by whoever is designated as the land use authority. That probably would be the zoning administrator. They have explicitly said that the town council cannot be involved in approving a subdivision. Hmm. So that changes, takes out all, we've got all this language that says as approved by the town, as recommended by the town. All that is going to have to be replaced with very specific standards.
Can I say
sure
something?
Yes.
So while we're creating the subdivision ordinance, we're also going to have to do the same. Sorry, while we're creating the ordinances, we're also going to try and figure out a way to do it in a more timely manner.
Yes,
is that it?
Well, yeah, actually,
I mean, because I read those what we're supposed to. So while we're doing the subdivision ordinance, we should figure out how to do it quicker or however they want us to do it.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, because I read that today.
Yeah, we will have 15 days allowed to process the subdivision application. My feeling, and this I'll share with you, my experience in engineering was that we often had to, the engineer who did the design was asked to sign a certification that I read the rules and this, to the best of my knowledge, this meets the rules and I'm citing this with my professional reputation on the line. That's probably the way we're gonna have to go is just say that, okay, the surveyor has to sign off it. He verifies it meets all the beholder ordinances because we won't have time to get the application, send it to another engineer, have that person find time to look at it and send it back. If that's those procedural things, I still feel we need to kind of watch how other jurisdictions, the town's over 5,000 population, deal with it because there's 86 towns and 26 counties that all have to come into compliance. But yes, you're right.
But I think we should look at towns that are 5,000 and less, like we are, see what they're doing.
Well, they have the same deadline we do at the end of the year.
Exactly, but when we look at towns that are 5,000 and more, they're just so different than what we are. And there's got to be a lot of towns that are like, closer to our town.
And we certainly should share information with that. Yes. No, definitely that's very important. So what we'll have to do in many cases is come up with very explicit standards like referring to the urban wildlife interface code and just say, it must meet that code. And then you ask the applicant to certify or his design professional to certify it meets that. So let's go to the next slide because this is this gets into the street standards we were talking about. And so here's the typical, I felt at the start of this process, we're going to need some high level discussion about policies before we can start wordsmithing a street standard. So I threw this one out. Can we go up just a little higher? There, babe. Nope, we lost. There we go. Okay, so the challenge here is, what should a Boulder Streets look like? We've got three pictures there.
Mm-hmm.
What do people feel a Boulder Street should look like?
The ones on the left.
That's not allowed under ordinance. That's the problem. Exactly, Khalid. Our ordinances pretty much describe the middle picture. And our ordinances would probably allow that right-hand picture. But there's nothing our ordinance that would prohibit building something like that right-hand picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what we probably want is what the left-hand picture looks like.
Yeah.
So Lee and I discussed, at first he said, well, here's a set of street standards from UDOT. And I looked at it and said, Lee, those are suburban standards.
Yes.
So then we talked a bit more. And what he and I actually concluded that we might want to look at is the Forest Service road standards, mm-hmm. which describes a gravel road with culverts and drainage mm-hmm. and a sufficient surface that doesn't turn into muck.
Yeah.
But it looks like what's on the left. That's a Forest Service, you know. So, or he also said Montana and South Dakota also have some very rural type gravel road standards. But yeah, we don't want to adopt something that.
What is Overton and Logandale in Nevada?
Yeah, okay.
If you drive out towards the lake route in Moapa and then you drive off the main street, they have really nice roads, but they're all gravel. They're not paved, which gives it a more rural look.
Yes.
So once you move off the main road, then it's more.
Yeah. And the only other thing about that is so then making sure that they, right? So you want to not lower the standard, but you have a specific standard.
Yeah.
Because then you don't want the opposite either. Like, so then I put dirt down and a tiny bit of gravel and the fire truck got sunk going down my driveway because isn't a secure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see right now we say, you know, we're very vague. We say it's the Wildland Urban Code says a no-weather road, but that's not really well defined. And so that's a kind of discussion we need to start with. But in the process, it's a chance to revisit those street standards and get rid of the language that describes a suburban street. And that's why everyone's been doing private driveways, since they don't want to meet our street standards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next one here. So, you know, a good structure for this process, identify what problem we have, look at multiple alternatives, compare the alternatives, and consider unintended consequences. And then we can come up with a specific, okay, this is the way we want to go, and then start getting into fleshing out the details. And that's kind of what we did with the three ordinances tonight. But we really did reach a first conclusion. What do we want to do? And now we realize we need to fix the wording here and there. I think, you know, I want everyone else to help think about some of the other high-level issues that we need to think about setting standards for: housing, open space, changes to zoning, visual appearances of the community, economic challenges, which you bring up very quickly. So let's see, next one. Okay, so. What I was suggesting we do is we make an outline of the new zoning and subdivision ordinance language. And so it's really all of the land use. And as Lee said, a lot of stuff is going to have to move from subdivision, which is going to be purely administrative, into zoning, which still is a discretionary legislative act. So, yeah, so there's more flexibility for the town council to make site-specific decisions if it involves a zoning change. But if the zoning allows it and the subdivision ordinance allows it, it's going to get approved. So we have to think about where things belong in sections, plus getting rid of things like the fact that we have building permit requirements in three different places and we have redundant definitions and so forth. So and I have a sample of what that outline would look like. But in the process of doing that outline, it's really helped me identify what topics need a high-level discussion. And then, you know, we'll need a couple months to really take those high-level discussions, like what we want streets to look like. What do we need different zones than we currently have? We want to make a distinction between the open fields of Lower Boulder and the Pinyon Juniper and North Boulder. Those high-level discussions before we start writing ordinance language. Although, but the other parts we can jump into right now and just say, okay, what we've got is okay. We just need to put it in the right place and make sure it doesn't contradict itself. So maybe look at the next one here. Yeah, which is too small to read, unfortunately, but it's a flavor. That's just one page or part of a page of what my outline currently looks like. So I'm saying, you know, we need a policy discussion about our zones. We have several sections that, you know, most ordinances, they start with what's your authority for zoning. So let's put everything that involves the legal authority for zoning in that place. Then we have a section that says land use authorities. That describes what does the town council do? What does the planning commission do? What does the zoning administrator do? What does the board of adjustment do? Get those all consolidated. We have several different sections that talk about how the ordinances are interpreted. They all really logically go together. So the purpose of the outline would be to get topics in the right place, consolidate information that's on the same topic, and identify things that we can just adopt as is or retain as is, and what things do we really want to start changing policy. And I hope maybe by next month we can have at least a first draft on that outline that can go out to people to start commenting on. That's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
I see. What's the comment there?
Not right now.
Okay. All right. All right. So then, you know, break the outline into manageable units and make a schedule for working on them. So that, like I say, we have 15 months to get this all done, which means that, you know, if we've got 10 high-level topics, that says we better take care of a couple each month. So we have a few months at the end to get all the ordinance language straightened out. So once we have the outline, we can figure out, okay, what are the manageable chunks and how do we set a schedule to work on it? I think we're probably gonna need some more formal committee work between the meetings, which could easily be, we could either have special meetings or we could have committees which would consist of less than a quorum, no more than two PC members plus staff plus any involved citizens. Mm-hmm. But I think getting that work done between the meetings is going to be very important so that things come to the meeting ripe for discussion as we did tonight.
Or I also suggest maybe making two meetings a month, one where you only discuss these changes and then
the other ones, the regular meetings, which will have
other items.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, that's another option.
Sure. Yeah. So,
because these changes are going to extend your regular meeting
for
very long. So,
yeah, we're all already.
Yeah. So, I think once we have the outline and we can see how big the task is, we'll conclude we need more. We certainly need more than one meeting a month. Okay. So, next one here. So some of the other topics that I know we need to consider, obviously we have a lot of priority items from the June housing workshop that should be rolled into the new land use ordinances. Removing one of the big ones we have not talked about much, but did get a lot of dots, was incentives for permanent land protection. How are we going to accomplish that? Because I think if we're going to preserve the rural character of this town for a century, it's going to have to come from people putting permanent protections on the land. Otherwise, it's going to just keep getting nibbled away one subdivision at a time. So that's going to be a check. That's another big topic. The next slide here is other things to consider. There have actually been a lot of state law changes since the first Boulder land use discussions were in the back in the 90s. So we should make sure we've cleaned that stuff up. A lot of our definitions are inconsistent with state law. We should fix those. Fixing inconsistent and redundant language. And then the big one will be the procedures for processing subdivision applications on the timetable that the state law gives us.
Now, wait a minute. LUDMA, that 2008 LUDMA plan, I mean, that was a major change that Bruce Parker
pretty much, you remember that, Mark, that he pretty much wiped out, he didn't wipe out, but there were significant changes in zoning and subdivision ordinance made at that time. So 2008 was the big change. And then there was a subsequent, I think, 2013 amendments to LUDMA, which was, it's an umbrella kind of land use development and management act. Those things were incorporated in Boulder's ordinance.
The problem that I'm finding is we go through the ordinances, is that they didn't repeal the old language. So when we codified, all of a sudden we've got some new language. And then there's this ordinance from 2000 that contradicts the one.
That was just tacked on. Yeah. So Bruce did a nice job of putting all the new stuff in, but he did not go through and clean up the contradictory.
Yeah,
so you're right on that one. So
that's where the problem comes in. That's why I kind of was pointing out to Lee, like, okay, there was an error in the 2022-1. Let's explicitly repeal it so somebody doesn't find it and try to put it back into the codified ordinances.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, but no, that's a good point, Peg. Thank you. And then I think once we've gone through the high-level discussions, we can really start talking about drafting ordinance language for each section. And then in some ways we started that tonight. But we've got three topics now that we're starting some language that could hopefully go and be adopted into the final, the big rewrite. If we're going to do it, we have to be aiming for taking this whole package to public hearing in about a year from now, September 24, which would mean that it could go to town council in October or November, and that the deadline is December 1st. So, although I say we've got 15 months, we've really got like 12 months to have it ready for public hearing.
Well, yeah, and I think public hearings, in my opinion, are very helpful in getting input up front and getting people kind of either on board or letting us know how, you know, what's working and what they think is working and what, I mean, it's more minds coming to the table. So I'm not opposed to having public meetings as we go along. Hearings as we go along.
Yeah, this would be the formal public hearing for the
final package
going to town council.
Right.
That has to be about September.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
Okay, so that's sort of, my last slide just has some more big questions, but I think the people needs to, right now, what I'm recommending is for next month, we've got the legalizing RVs for sure. We've got the three ordinances we've worked on for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those are the...
the discussion happened.
The discussion, I can't see us.
And I think...
Legalizing RVs next month.
No, we could start that discussion about how are we going to do it.
Right.
And I think if we had time, I think it would be good to start discussing what Boulder streets should really look like. That's probably too much. But I think at least those topics we can see what committee work we could get done to be ready to have meaningful discussions on those topics. So
those are and then on top of that we have finalizing whether we're going to send this last three to the town council.
Yes.
Okay, so I just have a comment on this, basically. So this is what you are proposing that we do as far as moving forward on the subdivision ordinance, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, and so the other thing I want to talk about is we got a memo from Lee about replacing the present subdivision ordinance and doing it also in the checklist standard or form, and I want to make sure that we're consistently talking with Lee, and because he's a consultant for the town, so that anything that we move forward on as a planning commission, that we're involving Lee with in this too.
Yes, he's seen this presentation.
That's great. So, and I still am going to go back to how we created the commercial standards as far as using those checklists and whatever and how simplified that became for us
and how this, how we can simplify this whole process and make it understandable. And I still want to go back to that. And that's my input, basically.
Yes. And
performance standards.
Yes. So yeah. How we put standards, how we use those in this subdivision ordinance.
Yeah, I think that's...
Or in the ordinances in general.
In general.
I think that's...
But what we're working on... But what we're doing is, I mean, we're working on the subdivision ordinance. That's what we're being required to get rid of.
What we're really doing is rewriting both subdivision and zoning.
Well...
So all of land use.
Okay, but that's the thing too is, so we're going to include zoning in this now?
Yes, because I think a lot of things that are currently in subdivision should probably end up moving to zoning.
Yeah, that's what, and subdivision becomes more of a procedural definition.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm afraid that, you know, as much as I think there's a great merit in those checklists and the point system, I'm not sure how that's going to fit into the way that the state law says subdivisions have to be processed, which is very much more, it's either a lot permitted or it's forbidden.
It's not, yeah, exactly. How do we make that clear and simple? So that's
seen those lines.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Jump right in there. I was envisioning the checklist thing as being more of the application, like tied to the application itself.
Me
so
too.
We still get to formulate our own application
for
subdivision.
Yeah.
It's just how we process that application after it comes back. I mean, once it's deemed complete, then the 15 days starts.
That's right. The completion becomes very, very important.
Yes, yes. That kind of becomes our conceptual plan period, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we deem it complete, starts our clock. So we need to be very strict about the application being complete.
Yeah. Shelley has a comment or question.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, John. I remember when this first came up. And I love the idea of being on top of it as much as we are doing. But they also said that this subdivision, there's a lot of people that think that changes are going to happen to this mandated change that's going to happen in 2024. Is any of it coming through right now that there's a lot of counties that aren't happy with this?
You know, I'm not going to second guess what the state, I will expect that there will be attempts to amend that, yes. I can't second guess, so all we can do right now is assume that we have a December deadline to meet the existing law, and if the legislature changes it in January, it might be a lot easier for us. But in any case, the discussions on things like what a Boulder road should look like, or a Boulder streets should look like, or how we want to preserve open space, will be productive in any case. So that's probably where we should start. It's the foundation for the rest, and it'll be productive no matter whether they change the detailed requirements or not. Does that
answer your question? I agree with you. I agree that we've got to kind of be on top of it and not wait until January and stuff when they could change it. But we've got to realize that could happen to us, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can think of two examples where the legislature passed a land use ordinance. One was the one where they made it easy to create a new town and then Bryce Canyon City appeared. And the next year they repealed that.
Yeah.
And there was also the one with Hideout up in Summit County, mm-hmm. where they allowed something, realized, oh my gosh, somebody took advantage of it. Now let's repeal it. So who knows what the legislature will do.
And when we talk like this, I like to the public to know that that's what we're working with too. This isn't all in stone yet, but we're planning for it to come and hit us. So we've got to not be shocked about it and try to get all this together last minute. We've got to be on top of it. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thanks.
And I think in the process, if we could come up with a new set of land use ordinances that really look at what the desired future condition of the town is, that's going to be a much better structure rather than a fear of change, which is happening. Let's decide what positive changes we want. Jennifer, I really loved your comment at the town council meeting that, you know, just saying change is going to happen is demeaning. We've got to direct the change to in a direction we want it to go. So that was a great comment, Neil. So that's what I have. So that gives us a lot for the next meeting, doesn't it?
Peg, can you pass that the whole PowerPoint on to all of the
Do you want me to post it on the website?
No objection. I just felt, you know, without the discussion, it would probably have been a little bit confusing. Okay, so.
Right. I'll put it on the website and put it out for later.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least we have a place to go to look at it again, which I think we all probably need. So are we done with that one?
Yes.
Okay. So the other item that we had on our agenda was whether we wanted to have a housing follow-up, the November housing follow-up. And I feel like because what happened tonight didn't really get finalized, that maybe we should consider setting that for January when we have more thoughts for public to be reviewing in committee. Or
I think that's what we're good. I think that might be a good idea. I'll get us over the holidays. I mean, we're already into September. I mean, hopefully these things will all go
through. So we have September and then October, and then we have, by October, we're going to be talking about a forum.
Yeah, I'd rather not do, I wouldn't mind moving it back.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, great. Elena, agree.
January.
Yeah.
Start the new year.
Yeah. So it'd be a whatever kind of follow-up
right
to the forum.
Right. And maybe we'd have more information on when, what were you calling it, where conservation, sort of land conservations or preservation and that kind of thing that people could think about too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as much as housing, we could be talking about open space preservation as well.
Right. And maybe we could even have something in regards to clustering options and that kind of thing too.
We're going to know too what's happening with these ordinances that are going to go
in the state.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, we'll have more information from that we can use in January.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To share. Yeah. Okay. That didn't start out with a motion, which is, I make the motion that we do our follow up on the housing in January.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Okay, can I have a vote?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elena, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Thanks. Okay, it's passed. We're going to look at January. Can I have our staff and commissions? We got John's report, which was substantial. Staff, do you have anything you want to add? Peg, or
my staff report. I guess.
Oh, thank you. Fair warning that I'm going to have one more overnight in Salt Lake the day before our commission meeting next month. So kind of the same thing. The more the documents can get before I leave on the 12th, going up the 12th, spending the night coming back the 13th. It's of September. It's not a biggie, but if we can have things by that weekend, then I can get things posted on the web, get things distributed to everybody. And I can handle last minute stuff as I can handle it. Like, it was just kind of lucky I was sitting at my computer when your stuff came in, John. So that wouldn't necessarily always happen. So anything on the day of the meeting, you never know. I think you should just be aware of that.
Yeah. So. And I think that, as was stated before, that anything that comes in the day of the meeting is just a discussion, and whether we have time for it or not is probably more appropriate. But I do think it was worth looking at so that we can make sure whatever we send to the town council is actually what we want to send to the town council. And we've had, you know, time to really think about it and discuss it, because basically all the things that Lee sent us as a group, we didn't have discussion time until tonight.
No, we got the information at a super reasonable. It did come to us at,
Right.
And day, but, you know,
but we didn't personally have had the chance to have a discussion based on what he sent, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You mean Lee's stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
We did.
We don't get that, but especially on the meeting.
No, I know, but that's right. So, I mean, we gave him
input,
and he gave us input, and then I still think it had to have a meeting.
And I just want to emphasize, you know, I've always learned that if you've got issues or questions that are complicated, it's best to give it to Lee well before the meeting. He's got time to think about it. We've got time to research it. But I shouldn't be the only one who's doing it. Anyone else who's got some concern, share it with Lee if you say, hey, I don't like this paragraph. Could you explain why you put that in?
Right.
It gives him time to be prepared to answer.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Right. And it's a lot of information, and it's not, you know, and once it gets in ordinance form and it's legalese and it's, you know, it becomes harder to define what your questions would be, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but,
well, that's why I say we need to start with the outline. Here's the what we want to accomplish. And agree on that, and then you put it in ordinance language.
Right. Okay, do you have anything?
No report.
April has no report.
No application.
Any other commissioners with anything they want to share? I'm sorry. Do you have anything? Okay.
Are we going to talk about if we're going to do 2 meetings a month, work meetings?
I think I'm on vacation almost all of August.
Can we talk about that next month?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, let's let that one sit for a month.
Next month.
Yeah, yeah. And how and how we're gonna approach that. Yeah. I think that's
yeah.
That's for thought.
Yeah,
for next month.
I'm excited to get ready, but I still I'm super excited to get ready to delve into all of this.
It's gonna be a lot,
but I'm not quite ready to do that yet. I'm waiting for fall, which is next one.
Yeah. Holy cow. Okay, so now we have public comments. Anybody in the public want to make a comment? Okay, Jen.
Hi, it's Jennifer Buck again. So just back to the duplex as an average lot size. I think that it's important to consider that those solve some problems when we figure out the details while the lot sizes are 5 acres. I know there's been discussion of working to reduce the lot size. And then if those are already on the books, it becomes a different thing when the lot sizes are smaller. So average lot size, then what if it's 2.5? What if it's 1? So then we have to like think about that in the big picture, just so it's on everybody's mind at some point. And I think that the fear of change is not fear of change, but fear of unmitigated change or unintended consequences. And that's really what's motivating people to be wary of the possibilities that things could get out of hand quickly. So just wanted to reiterate that.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. The upcoming business. Okay. Well, we have the three ordinances to discuss again, and whether or not there are significant changes. I guess we'll get the next meeting at the town council meeting. We're going to discuss what we're working on, yeah. Correct?
We could give a presentation and get some feedback. What I'm thinking is we really should I think Lee is right that none of the changes that we're discussing are substantive. The criteria we use at the Air Quality Board of whether we had to do another public hearing, if all you did was change wording to clarify it, correct grammar errors and that, the AG's office said, no, that doesn't need another public hearing. If you made a basic change in the policy, it should go to a public hearing. I'm wondering if we shouldn't still schedule a possible public hearing depending on how Lee's final wording looks.
So a just-in-case public hearing?
Yeah. And that means that the big difference is it says we have to have the ordinance language from Lee by
mid-month.
By, yeah.
Okay.
By about 15 days. By the middle of the month, we could have it out on the 10 days before.
Would this be on all three of them?
Yeah. And, okay. And just in case we feel that it really deserves another public hearing.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like we got a lot of work done tonight. Well, we got a huge amount of work. I don't think it's going to be that much for the next meeting.
Yeah.
Could.
And I guess it could be a pro forma public hearing. We could,
yeah.
You know, it's not going to hurt to.
No,
no. Well, you'll have those cleanup things inserted. And,
yeah. And it should, then we have a final language that we intend to send to the attorney and to the town council.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt to have it plan that we have another hearing.
Okay. I'll schedule that. Okay.
And hopefully we can get those ordinances to town council. Yeah. The big one I'm concerned if we do manage to come up with architectural standards for duplexes, that would be a substantive change to the current draft.
Well, Elizabeth is still going to present you. So we would still plan a public hearing for the revised language, but in the meantime, Elizabeth and John would still present to the town council what the intent is, right?
Yeah, just to get some feedback.
Right, yeah.
If we put, you know, on what, here's what we're thinking about, here's.
Yeah. So basically the September 1st.
Yeah, is that, wait.
Oh. I mean, I say September 1st for Lee's, because the 14th is our month and that gives 2 weeks for us to all have a.
At the bare minimum, I'd want to have things posted and available to the public by the 5th of September. So if he was able to get that the weekend before, yeah, that'd be the holiday weekend.
Okay.
That would be ideal. But it definitely would have to go out on the 5th of September.
Yeah. So we have three ordinances that we look for hearing and then some topics for information discussion.
Yeah, and the RV pad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
streets.
Street, Boulder Street. And Colleen, I had noted down that you wanted to talk about how to integrate the checklist concept into, maybe that's a future thing, I don't know, but you had said you want to discuss that more. How to integrate checklists in.
Well, I think that I think between what Lee approached us with and John, you know, like, how are we going to put that together? I mean, I think it's just the next step, basically, is because we haven't really heard from Lee except for what he sent to us a while back as far as how he sees us approaching the subdivision ordinance too, and I want to hear what he has to say about it. That's kind of how I feel about it too. Yeah,
he never closed that memo.
No.
Yeah,
and so I want to hear. I mean, we've been working on these three ordinances, and I want to hear his perception on where the Planning Commission goes forward on subdivision ordinance, the new subdivision ordinance. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we actually started it.
Yeah.
We actually have a format on the checklist because we started it.
Yeah.
Before.
Okay. That, so the checklist for subdivision.
Is that a half book of mine, babe?
No.
Okay. You want me to resend that to you?
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, that'd be great.
I'm sure Lee knows. I mean, I've mentioned it to him. I mentioned it to him.
Seems like it was back in April. I mean, it seems like a while ago.
Well, it was a while ago. I mean, I think we talked about that. I mean, I used to have it and I didn't keep it. So you can definitely find it. And I know Lee knows where it is.
I've got it. Definitely. So it should be maybe in April. Somewhere in April. Okay.
Way back.
Oh yeah, I might.
I got it.
Oh,
I will send you. I'll send you guys all this stuff I have to send you. And my list is scattered. My notes are.
Okay. I think we're ready.
The town council Thursday's meeting. Town council requested that the planning commission review the qualifications or guidelines expectations of a town approved engineer and possibly a list of recommended engineers for the town to use. For those of you that were at the planning commission or town council meeting, but whether it's you put it on your immediate next agenda, but that was requested from the town council to you all.
On that one, given that I have been a registered professional engineer for almost 35 years, I'd like to just, I would be willing to handle that one and pull, because I'm familiar with all the ethics and guidelines and all that. I'd be happy to pull that together.
Right. Yeah, and this is just in regards to per our ordinance. It says if the town approved engineer, if a subdivision comes in, we may require the applicants to have a town approved engineer review the subdivision.
Yeah, but in the housekeeping list, an engineer. We were changing that a little bit.
We have lots of references, but yeah, I will pull together some a white paper just kind of explaining the issues that Judy Drain was asking about at the town council meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, this is okay. Their, you know, typically in larger towns, they would have an engineer on payroll. Since we do not, my suggestion was we have a list of engineers, since subdivisions tend to be done by Jones at the Mill or someone else. And so if we had just a list that we approve of, then if it's one of those engineers that's on the list that did the applicant's subdivision, then we can pick another person. And so it's
okay, John, I'll let you go ahead and do that. That's great. I do think that we have been talking about the possibility of changing that requirement, that as a recommendation that an engineer is an engineer.
Let me handle it, because Judy was talking about two completely different topics and mixing them up. So I will try to get something that I think will help educate everyone. It will take me a few hours to write it, but
because no matter what, we need a town engineer at any question, because it's also regarding streets or other issues.
Well,
and so that's
okay. We'll just leave it at that, and then we'll go from there.
Well, and it's going to become even more important under the new subdivision ordinance, because the law says basically is if you end up with a dispute with the applicant, it goes to a panel of three engineers who makes the final decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely taken out of the town's hands.
Oh, wow.
So I'll try to get something together, just bring, you know, explaining the issues here.
Local control.
Not on our legislature. That's all I get.
You are not allowed.
I think this is the one you're talking about.
Donna Owen raised it.
No, that's what you guys
read. Oh, Donna.
This
has did you have a comment?
I'm not talking about a checklist.
We're over the public comments, Donna. Sorry.
That's okay. I understand.
Okay, so, all right. So can I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll second that. I'd make a motion that we adjourn the meeting for tonight.
Okay. Can I have a second?
I gladly second it.
All right, it's been moved in second. Can I have a vote?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming.
Bye.